to open up more formally, the Honourable Chairperson Eunice Kerim is obviously standing committee, invited us to join him here, as we normally do for this. And we just need the agenda adopted, the ones who have that agenda, you've got it in front of you. Someone to propose the adoption of that agenda. Here we are. Have you got it in front of you? Honourable Muneer, have you got it? Can you propose adoption? You can't. You have it. Right.
Can I second it?
Thank you. Second it. We can now move. I never realised it was such a tight ideological document. But so the next issue, though, is, and I'll just check here.
Runa from Trade, we don't have the agenda.
Right, Ms. Makanda, just get a copy of that agenda and ask someone down the passage to make 3 or 4 copies. We're not going to be held back by a little thing like a copy. Right, the second item then on the agenda are some of the apologies, and we certainly have an apology from the Honourable Williams, who's a medical apology, the Honourable Alberts, he's on a bereavement, and... All right, and we have one for the Honourable Peace Mabi not being well. And is there any other apology that we have? We have 2 further apologies from members in other committees. And Kachalia as well. Right, those are our apologies on this. And can we ask yourself, Alan, sorry, to put in the other apology?
From the Standing Committee on Finance, Honourable Lise Shlengwan Kwankwa and Chibambu.
I need to inform the nation through this. Hopefully it's been cast on 408 sometime in the next 48 hours, that Tandi Tobias Fokola is now the whip of the Finance Committee. And she is really whipping everybody, including the chairperson. So, Comrade Chair, I must tell you, maybe it's better that you double up as a whip. Thank you.
Yeah, well, look.
I'm particularly clap hands enthusiastically. So I will note that when we have our Finance Committee meeting. But one more in us. Yeah, okay. But who did that thing? I spoke to her. Let's talk outside. It was not me. Okay. So, on a more serious note, colleagues, Finance Committee members, I have engaged with Mr. Mania until 2 minutes ago. The projected fiscal framework report was sent out to everybody. Mm-hmm. Mr. Mania is open to the idea that instead of meeting at 4 o'clock tomorrow, you'll see the amendments in red. Dick Lady came back to me also to say she's fine with it. So that we'll discuss it. Maybe we can even vote on it after the joint meeting. Thank you.
Right. I think you've invited us to call on the DTI to make their comments on the document. Is this correct, Chairperson?
Yeah, I saw that you spoke on yes. Friday and Monday and Saturday. What we've suggested is because the financial sector code was adopted by Cabinet within the last 2 weeks, in our report we keep saying the proposed or amended or draft financial, between Zakela and me, we've cleaned that up, right? It is now a Cabinet decision. It's going to be gazetted shortly. It also has changed slightly our recommendations because we were hoping to intervene in that process. You will recall in S12A, the majority of the 2 committees said that the committee should recommend gazetting it. So both Comrade John and I did speak to the ministers and said, okay, the majority wanted gazetted. What has been agreed to, I spoke to your DG, you recall, Mr. Lionel October, and he's confirmed that, I'm going to say what he did say, or perhaps I can go on record, as I understood what he said. By the way, I think I did tell you. He said that these hearings have really helped them a lot. Because he said, you people have done, well, I don't know, well, it's compliment to all of us. He said, you've done wonderful work. What you've done is you've alerted the financial sector to how important this is, and so we found it much easier to process issues. And they kept raising this issue, what about the committee's recommendation? So they've committed I think our colleague here will say so, to looking at our recommendations, even though the code has been adopted and is about to be gazetted, the deal they struck there was we had agreed that they can gazette, not that they are obliged to listen to Parliament. We can recommend, yeah, and they are going to gazette it, and now we are, what they've agreed to is that we have our recommendations inserted into the process immediately. Secondly, they also agree that as soon as we vote on the report, they will insert it into the financial sector summit process. So you're going to take us through. Well, there's nothing to hide. We had a meeting with them right now to explain the context. Now, we know that the DTI and the BEEC feel that the generic codes should prevail right across, even though there are provisions for exemptions taking account of the specificity of a sector. And you must present arguments for it, and it's now in the new report. You'll see it in tracking. We'll go to it when we come to it. But we said to them that there are some issues around which this committee cannot make decisions at the moment. We have to have more discussion around it, and we'll take you through the report. And that we're calling this the first report because we're going to do a second report after the summit. That some of the issues, Comrade Chair, we've agreed. It's a matter of negotiating. It's complex. It's technical. How are we going to sit here for hours and negotiate a deal when there is a financial sector summit? And there are other institutions that can do that. So this is report one. So we said to them, it's no use now fighting old battles. Let's agree that there are these differences between the two departments, and we'll deal with that in report number two. Thank you, Comrade Chair.
Thank you, too, Honourable Chairperson. As you can see, DTI, and once you've just given us your name on the record here, just give it to us again for the record. Clear? I knew it wasn't Jacob's letter. Jacob Maputo. Okay, right. Thanks. If with your agreement, Chairperson, we can immediately bring them in on page 15, which is part 3. Page 15, part 3, Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Codes and the Financial Sector Code. And your colleague is Ms. Busiswe Izengwanya, Ngwenya with an E, right. So if you would take us through, but in this committee we don't have time to waste, huh? And if you take this one here, which is your ownership issues on page 11, all right, on your PowerPoint, that's what you're looking at. But in the main text for everyone, it was 15. Let's go to that. Now, if you can take us through that, because we want a clear understanding. This is a joint committee. Can you do that? We agree, Chair? Yes,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Can I just raise something? You see, let's start with your submission, point one. We'll come to the report thereafter, right? Let's hear what Cabinet agreed to. Mm. So what the Comrade Chair is referring to is, maybe you can start, Comrade Chair, with nine. See, nine deals with the scorecard, right? The rest of it we're familiar with, right?
Yeah.
You start on slide nine and go through to the end. The three key issues you remember, it's the same thing for Finance Committee members I explained to you when the insurance bill comes up. It's around ownership, license, and punitive fees. Okay. So if you start from, Comrade Chair, from your slide 9, then we'll go to the report. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Co-Chairs. I will, as requested, present the scorecard for the FSC as has been adopted by Cabinet, and we're expecting that the Minister will soon approve it and then have it gazetted. But as it was mentioned, there's also an agreement that it will have to be reviewed within 12 months, and also take into account the report of this committee as well as the summit, the soon coming summit. So the scorecard for the FSC, it's got three parts to it. There's a scorecard for banks and life offices, because those are similar in terms of how they operate, and to a larger extent in terms of how they are regulated. And if you look at their scorecard, there's two extra elements over and above what is in the generic codes. Thank you. What we call empowerment financing, which is the financing that they have to commit or they've committed to facilitate BEE in the economy, and also ensuring that they support the areas where banks are not necessarily doing well, you know, your LSM 1 to 5 in terms of affordable housing, infrastructure, you know, for those the areas where most of those people live. So that's empowerment financing. And then access to financial service talk to ensuring that there's accessibility geographically, but also ensuring that they are products that are designed for the people who are at that level, the LSM 1 to, you know, to 5. So those are the extra element or the two elements that are unique for the banks as well as life offices. Then the short-term insurance, there's only one additional element, which is access to financial services. And then all other institutions, the brokers, the asset managers, their elements are very much the same as those that are in the generic codes. And then we've got the small enterprises, and by small we mean those that are making a revenue of 10 million per annum. They are exempted from the compliance of the FSC scorecard, however they might do it by choice, but largely they are exempted. So the next slide, I mean, just the scorecard is just highlights the differences between the generic scorecard as well as the suggested FSC scorecard, and also highlighting what we call priority elements. And the priority elements, it's ownership, obviously very important. You've got skills development, ensuring that we build capacity in the country, in the sector. Procurement and enterprise and supplier development is also a priority, as well as the empowerment finance is also one of the priorities. So those are the seven elements of the scorecard. As I said, the empowerment financing as well as access to finance only talks to certain entities and not all entities within the sector. Now, starting with the ownership element, just really to highlight what are the key principles. So the ownership target is 25%. It's the same as the generic codes, but the measurement is different. Because of the nature of the sector, the way it's regulated. Unlike all other sectors, such as your agriculture, ICT, the finance sector has got strict regulations, such as your Basel III and all other regulations. Now, because of that, the way to achieve the 25% ownership is different. Entities, have an option of doing direct ownership of 10%, and then the rest, which is the 15%, they do what we call indirect ownership, whether it's through provision of financial access to finance, whether it's through support for SMMEs and all other initiatives that the banks or the financial institutions are able to, to do, which must be equivalent to the indirect, the 15% indirect ownership. So that's the one of the major differences between the normal generic scorecard on ownership as well as the financial services. The other difference is with regard to the issue around what people call once empowered, always empowered. in the financial, now in the general codes, if an entity, loses its BEE shareholder, the BEE shareholder decide to cash or they decide to sell, the general codes give an entity a period of up to 3 years to be able to continue to recognize the scoring of points, but then after a period of 3 years, that recognition falls away, and the entity is expected to come up with another BEE deal if it still wants to recognize their ownership. Now, with the financial services, due to the nature of the sector, as I said, been regulated, and issues around prudentiality, the scorecard says that if a BEE shareholder is lost, the entity will continue to recognize the or score the points, but provided that number one, the BEE shareholder was there for a period of minimum 3 years, that's the condition, the first condition. The other condition is that the transformation should have taken place in the entity, and that net value should have been created in the hands of the BEE shareholder or the black people. So those are the conditions for which an entity is able to continue to recognize the BEE scoring. Obviously, this is one of the issues that it still have lots of question marks. It's one of those issues that post this gazette, it will have to be intently looked at to say that we really need this principle, or is there a way that we can be able to deal with it, balancing obviously the fact that we want our financial institution to remain sound and well regulated in line with international standards, but also ensuring that we don't stifle transformation in the country. So those will be the two issues in the under the ownership. As I said, the indirect ownership, the potential finding of 100 billion, through the rules, the rule around once empowered, as well as indirect ownership, the potential 100 billion that has been estimated that will serve as a catalyst for black business growth in the sector, which I think is very important, because as we always say, that the role of the financial sector really is to ensure that there's capital available in the country so that other sectors of the economy, in particular the productive sector, are able to function. So, okay, this is the scorecard on ownership, just the numbers in terms of scoring. As you can see, it's largely the same as the generic, but as I mentioned, the major difference is the measurement principle, where with the financial service, there's the direct and indirect ownership, whereas the generic codes, you're only talking about the direct ownership of 25%. But the targets are largely the same. Issues around management control, maybe I can skip that, because they're also very much the same as in the generic. But I think the key thing there is that there's emphasis on the sector. The council has identified that the institutions are very much struggling with regard to empowerment of African people. So you'll see that the scorecard put more emphasis on that to ensure that there is a balance in terms of ensuring that Africans in particular are being promoted or employed at managerial levels of the financial institution. So that issue is being acknowledged and recognized by the council, and there's an attempt to address it through the charter. Skills, I think I'll also just skip on this one.
Emphasis here is it's weighted towards. I mean, that's...
Yes, it's weighted towards the junior to middle management, training of junior to middle management, yes, because the, again linking it to the management control, where I said that the companies are struggling in particular to employ or promote, people at senior to top management. So the skills development is supposed to be used to create that pipeline of managers that could be able to be promoted or to be employed on that. So the skills development, largely, there's more weighting towards the training of unskilled, semi-skilled, as well as the junior management level. Then the next element, which is enterprise and supplier development, it's got two parts to it. There's the procurement part as well as the development part, where the institutions are expected to spend financially and non-financially in developing black SMEs. So the procurement part, there is a commitment to ensure that, at least up to 30% of procurement within 5 years, should be coming from black-owned entity. That's a very key thing to note. And then up to about 14% from the medium-sized entity, and then up to 12% from the small entity. So those are the key thing to note under the procurement. I mean, as you know, with the banks, it's not unlike other entities, banks don't really have many things to procure. But there is a role that they can play in terms of ensuring that their ICT systems and any other thing that they procure, they also empower black companies and the emerging small business. The second part to the element, as I said, is enterprise and supplier development, wherein up to 2% of the net profit should be spent on supplier development. But then we said that for the banks, because we don't want to limit them to only their own direct suppliers. Otherwise, we won't make any impact. So a bank is allowed to develop a second-tier suppliers that are in other sectors of the economy, agriculture, mining, etc., etc. So they are not only limited to suppliers that they do business directly with. They can do, it's much, much more broader as compared to other codes, other sector codes, because of the nature of the sector. Then enterprise development, the target there is 1% of net profit after tax. Okay, then the socio-economic development, which is more or less equivalent to corporate social investment, but for the purpose of BEE, we always say that we must be biased towards initiatives that will ensure income-generating activities. In other words, teaching a man how to catch or a woman how to catch a fish. So we need to be focused on that, notwithstanding that there could be other areas such as health programs and whatnot, but let's focus more attention on income generating activity in the spirit of empowerment. And then the other area where the council has to identify a need is around consumer education spend. So 40% of the 1% that needs to be spent on the socio-economic development will be spent also on consumer education, on educating people about the products, etc., etc. Yes, very important, but obviously there are those who criticize to say, anyway, it is within the nature of banks to educate, the institution to educate their people about their products. So that's also another issue that when the review is made, we'll need to look at to say whether it's still needed or also whether we need to reduce the target and focus on the other area. There's also a bonus if an entity support the Fundisa grant or the bursaries for the purpose of education. Then the empowering finance element, as I said, is very important for supporting transformational infrastructure, especially on areas that were previously marginalized, such as your townships, rural area, etc. So the codes say that the financial institution, this element is supposed to assist that in ensuring that there is finance that is being channeled in those areas, including a support for black farmers, land reform projects, emerging farmers, low-cost housing, as well as the black business growth funding or SMME funding. So that's the aim for this element. Now, in terms of the target, as you mentioned, there's about 100 billion that has been committed to, split between the banks as well as the insurer or long-term insurer. The council will then work on the modality in terms of the qualification criteria, etc. But the view is that those need to be simple and not be based on existing business as usual principle. If an entity wants to score points for the purpose of this, it must demonstrate that this is indeed supporting transformation, and transformation cannot be business as usual. So that's the empowerment financing, including financing of BEE transactions. As you know, the banks are the ones that are supposed to facilitate that. So it's part of ensuring that we finance BEE transaction, but also that we support the marginalized areas with regard to infrastructure. We support black agriculture, local cost housing, as well as the generally funding for the SMMEs. Then the last element, access to finance, as I said, is about ensuring that we address issues of geographic location. So there is a commitment to ensure that there's access to things like ATMs, service points, transaction points in those areas that have been marginalized. There's even kilometers, if you read the codes, specify that should be 15 kilometer, 10 kilometer, etc., so that our people start to get access to financial services, but also ensuring that the products that have been designed, similar to the Mzansi as we know it, that will ensure that the people also, those products talk to the people, at that level, the LSM 1 up to 5, which is where the emphasis is, that the products that have been designed, will ensure access, for those people. The electronic access, ensuring that we also, institutions must ensure that there's access for electronic usage of the product and services. As you know, we are largely, the world is moving towards technological utilization, so that also is being has been put in the charter as one of the sub elements. I think those are the key issues highlighted. As I said, some of the issues will just need to be further looked at post the Gazette, a further discussion on them to ensure that the sector can play a meaningful role in facilitating transformation for the rest of the economy. Thank you, Coach.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jacob Maputa. When I hear this again from yourself, the way it's been codified and presented to us, truly, you know, one wonders what people are worrying about when you look at just the page 26 slide where access to financial services. You're simply asking people to implement the current code. Implement the current code. You know, it's nothing new. Implement. It's there.
Yeah.
But the other issue is that contrary to perhaps fears from some sectors or institutions in a sector, if you look at the actual priority elements on page 10 in these codes here, you'll see, look, the generic codes, what they are. You look at the short-term and long-term, short-term, and then the bonus points that are getting. There's a real understanding that, yes, this is a different animal here, different type of sector. And even beyond that, then, you look further on and you see that there's an understanding that the financial sector, the code impacts far more broadly than other sectors. Therefore, in the interest of recognizing the need for prudent fundamentals and state stability, etc., you've taken that into consideration. But at the same time, you've actually said, how do we transform that in a systematic and methodical way? And I think many of the fears, Chairperson, will be discounted if you see how the ownership target has been unpacked and addressed here. This is not going to break anyone. In fact, I'm inclined to think they're actually going to do very well. With this platform, with certainty, there'll be the opportunity for them to do so many other issues in the certainty that these are now the new generic codes. And, by the way, they hardly differ. It's a tweak here, it's a sweep there, and a little pull in somewhere else. So, personally, and I know Chairperson at Finance may wish to make one or two comments here, but I do draw them to page slide 23, where you're talking about the empowerment unique to the financial sector. You're talking about the acknowledgement that skills are critical at the early level to prepare people for management, etc. You're taking that directly into account and giving them bonus points, etc. So I really, I certainly want to thank our financial colleagues here in Parliament for, as it were, enabling us to have this put in to the financial transformation report and to recognize that it is essential. An essential instrument for transformation. And on that particular note, I'd just see if there are any comments, especially from the trade and industry, but of course the whip of finance. Honourable Coley, I just think of you as Tundi, and now, oh gosh.
I am Tundi, Chair. Don't call me any other thing. Chair, slide 10. On the access to financial services, when you look at bonus points, it's zero. And you know, if you want to entice people to give financial access to those who have been disadvantaged, you might want to give them a bonus point to encourage them to do it on a regular basis. Because actually, that's where the problem is. People don't have financial access. So, and I'm not saying they must do it in a reckless manner. There's rules in terms of the Credit Act in terms of how they can do it. But let's try and put a bonus point and see whether can it stimulate more access. Because it will, it to give them, you know, it will have, them to change the perception about the target market they've dealt with in the previous conjunction. I would want you to consider it. And then, in relation to slide 15, when I looked at management control, when you came to black female employees at senior management, you lowered the target so much as compared to black executives. With black executives, you looked at 60% and 50%, but then you apportioned only 30%. Women organizations won't be happy with it. In a country where we've adopted the principle of 50-50, at least they could have been at 40%, not even 30. That is too low. So we might want to change that principle to at least 40 as a starting point and then moving it towards a higher. I think I had the last. On consumer education spend, I'm going to beg for your indulgence not to change it in the current conjunction. It's not true when the financial services say to you, we do it anyway. And I'm going to make an example. Sometimes, and I'm going to use an anecdote just to demonstrate what I'm talking about. Sometimes this year I needed a loan from my insurance company. And I had a specific target of how much I needed. And they did not explain, but they took it for granted that I don't understand. They did not explain that if you repay the loan on a longer term, it's going to make you pay more interest as opposed to when you pay it in the short term. In actual fact, those people who were processing it insisted that I take it over a longer period than I had my targets already. And I asked this guy a simple question, why do you want me to take it over a longer period? And the answer was, you're going to pay less. I said, no, you're not. The monthly premiums that we'll be paying might look less, but the total repayment will be more. So, and I said to him, look, you are supposed to explain options to people. You are not explaining options. You are actually directing them to the more expensive option. And he didn't know that he dealt with a person who actually dealt with the Credit Act and so on. So when the financial institution guarantees that they do it, it's not true all the time that they explain. So you need to keep on putting this education targets until we have that leverage and confidence that actually they're not chasing their own targets in terms of how much they can gain, but they make people aware of what they're getting themselves into. So we're not yet in a situation where we can say we're safe in relation to that. So I'm begging that when you reconsider after the gas, don't change this. In actual fact, I would have preferred more, but, you know, it's business. I don't want to hamstring the possibility of them saying, okay, you have put stringent measures for us to be able to make business. So we'll have such a balance in relation to that. Thanks.
Good point on the female executives there. Thank you, Honourable Tobias. Honourable Kakani?
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think one wants to... I'm finding solace on the presentation that has been made because there were quite a number of questions that we had with the chairperson at the level of our committee on how we are going to go about some of these things. And I think the way the unit of Mr. Maphutha, you're dealing with BEE units, I think how you have crafted some of these things is going to assist us. But what I wanted to check, Comrade Chair, because we had our own engagement as a committee, it's whether this builds up towards the summit, and once the summit is done, then this will then kick in and so on. I mean, based on the discussions we had, it is sort of assisting us towards going to the summit, and then once the summit is done, then this comes in to also address some of the things that we're dealing with, and I see the chair nodding, so I'm very comfortable with that because at least we have some of the things that we can then look at. Comrade Tandi has raised the issue of female representation and the bonus point that you have the zero issue. But I also saw the zero on management and control on bonus. So there's no problem with that, and what does it mean? Because, you know, sometimes, especially at management, those are operational things, and once you don't have or compel, especially this sector to some of those things, a lot of money goes through management and whatever, and very little is led through dividends, and you don't even know how some of these things are dealt with. So I'm not sure whether it will also be, it is not feasible for us to look at allocation around that, or whether how you have casted it on slide 15 then speaks to certain things in slide 10. That's what I also wanted to know. But the last thing, Chair, and I know it may be very, very irrelevant or whatever, does all these things that we are talking about also going to apply in the insurance sector thing? So it will cut across all the financial. Okay, then I'm fine. Sure.
Got one point.
Yes, you're quite right there, Honourable Kakani. A quick one then, is it Honourable Tobias?
Yes, I'm sorry, I just forgot one point. It's in relation to the geographic location. It's slide 25. I've made my own observations, and I've raised on a continuous basis. And I'll make an example with the automation machines. I used to wonder that how on earth, if the large population of people is in the township, but they don't have access to financial, if they need to transact, they need to take a taxi and go to town to have a bank, you know. And this derives from a perception that townships are a risky environment, which is not necessarily at all times justifiable. I don't understand a person who sells vegetables in the streets when they want to bank their money. They must carry the risk of having to, with a bag, go like 30 kilometers just to go and bank. When in actual fact, in this current conjuncture, they can even do it in an ATM machine that is located closer to where they're operating. So I also believe that if we give some incentives to the bank, because I remember when I was still there with you guys, I used to engage the banks and say, what role do you play? And they said to me, we can play a role if you also put some money to safeguard our businesses, because we are a business. So we might want to check within the 100 billion allocation, look at incentivizing those who will bring services closer to people. And there's different ways of doing it. You can suggest even to them. For instance, in many localities, there's multi-people centers. Doesn't have to be a standalone, like a machine or something.
Right.
And not, I don't want it to be long-winded, but I'm saying let's relook that one also and see whether can we provide incentives for them to change their perception about providing services closer to people.
I think that's an important point as well. I haven't forgotten you, Honourable Mania, but Honourable Mantash.
So, listen, I am not sure if I'll be out of order, but I see on management control that black employees with disabilities as a percentage of all employees is still at 2%. Whether this is in line with our policies and also the target for female in management positions at 30%, yet the ANC policy says 50% of women representation in all organizations. Thank you.
Yes, did I, though, at some point hear the word disability? or not? It's at the bottom, page 15. I was just looking somewhere else. Right. So you spoke, well, is that still at 2%? Right. You've raised two points here. You've actually emphasized the previous point, which is constructive. Thank you very much. Honorable Meneer?
Thanks, Joan. Just on a lighter note, there are many different ways of pronouncing my surname. Meneer is a new low. It's Meneer.
Just interjecting. I think you have given a name to use. Okay.
And allow your imagination to run riot when I say you should have heard little boys trying to pronounce the word fubs.
What do they say?
Oh, please, it's not for public dissemination. Honorable Meneer, yes.
Thank you, Chair. Just two points of clarification. I mean, during the process of compiling the financial sector code, did you at any point do any or conduct any impact assessments of the possible effect of the code on growth in the financial sector, investment in the financial sector, and then also jobs, employment in the financial sector? So that's the first question. The second question just is a question of clarification from somebody who, because this material is outside finance and more properly in the DTI environment. When it comes to the financial sector code, what exactly is the code status in law? That's the first question. Who has discretion to amend the code, and what is the process to amend the code?
Yes, certainly, Chairperson Karim.
Your answer, let me just say from my side, it echoes much of what you have said, Chair, and so on. Firstly, I'm a bit surprised at the narrowing of the gap between, let's say, the DTI family and the finance family. Just to explain that, when we had the hearings, if you look at some of the stuff, it seemed very polarized. If you look at the DTI family, they were outraged, right? But why is the financial sector being treated so uniquely? What's so special about them? And we bought into it, we must confess, Akele. Partly you've been influencing me personally. And when you look at it now, actually the gap is reasonable. There are gaps, and it's been made up for. Secondly, I don't think I fully understood what the 100 billion rand empowerment funding is going to mean, right? So when you say potential is worrying, is it actually there as 100 billion or what? Thirdly, I think that, you see, the more we listen to you, I'm just very surprised, actually. I mean, when we last meet with the interim report, even then the gap seemed to be wide. Yeah. So some of the paragraphs we've got here are a bit outdated, actually. We can soften them. Because we're very dismissive of empowerment funding, but actually, to be quite frank, when you look at it, how are you going to manage getting, 100 black industrialists, in any case, from the state at the moment?
Yeah.
So I think we are a bit too dismissive of the, I must confess, national treasury. You bring this upon yourself by your attitudes, by the way, not just the substance. So, you know, treasury. So actually, I must confess that if you look at that report, and remember, we were looking at the report till 10 to 2 this morning, right, again. So it is striking that I think we are a bit, let's say, insensitive to the way the unique, specific nature of this sector means that we have to deliver, but in slightly different ways. The next thing to say is that there are things in this code, I mean, in this report, that I think we must include in the current report, because this updates us. Now, I got responses to all the issues, but as pointed out to me by comrades from the ANC once, and I agree, I thought about it, sometimes I answer for the executive, so I'll withdraw for now. You speak for yourself. No, don't worry. I'm not intimidated by anybody, as you know. Anybody. I speak my mind. Yeah, but you're right. I mean, I was wrong about the gazetting. I've admitted that, Tandy. When I don't understand things, I say. I don't understand what's going on, but if you understand it, it's fine by me. And Tandy understands tax issues much better than me. I admit that. So anyway, what I want to say is, I just like what the members have said. Mm. Most of the things they say require one line amendment here and there. But let me not respond to that. You speak to us on the following issues, based on what Pinky raised and obviously a related issue I want to ask. Pinky's saying, presumably this is going to come into effect, right? Now, I think, if I'm correct, first question is, when are you gazetting it? And can you please gazette it as soon as possible? We want that 100 billion rand to kick into effect. Two, can you actually, you see, like, for example, you say you will review it within the first year. We must put that, Zakele, I think just note that we should put that into the report, because we've got to hold you to account, right? But then I'm spilling over into the report. But I should stop now. Let me just hear what they have said. I'd like to come back because there's a lot of consensus here. But I have to say something from the Finance Committee side. This is very important. Please note that Linda Enso is back. The best member of this committee. Can you believe this, Comrade Chair? She went off without even getting a mandate from us or asking us to join her to the Himalayas.
I can't believe that.
She was gone for 2 weeks. And she said that she was so delighted to be away from Mr. Mania and his ranting that she really had a wonderful time. She was worried that while she's at the highest level of the mountain, she still hear Mr. Mania screeching about civil war, whatever it is. So we want to welcome her back. I'm going to point out to you, in terms of Rule 41, 1B, Roman numeral 2, subsection 2, you cannot go off on your own without consulting us and agreeing to take us along with you, paid for by Business Day. But you see why we say this? Because she, not Tandy, she has been the most active member of this committee. She turns up on time and she stayed till 7 p.m. and so on, right? None of the other members besides the chair of the Finance Committee is here.
When you were up in the Himalayas, you must have been, as it were, in conversation with the gods, as it were.
Chair, just on a short interjection, I thought you're absolutely correct. I do often use the term civil war. I wanted to tell you, and I should have made the point in the debate, but in fact it's inspired by the statement made by the Deputy President himself, a government at war with itself.
The DTI person, we got a Jacob Maputa to come in at this point, all right? And just on that note, the Commissioner sent her apology. She was coming. She's been redeployed with Ntuli, Zodwa Ntuli, to go elsewhere. And the next person is in hospital, unexpectedly. So we know we've got a very competent member of that team, Jacob Maputa. Thank you. Ngwenya.
Okay. Thank you, Chair, and honorable members. Very good points. I think some were comments, so I will take that. I agree on issues of bonus points for access to finance. That's a very important issue, and also incentivizing those who will be bringing services closer to the people. So that's something to take note of. And then on black women target, I just wanted to say that the nice thing about being a black female is that you are also a black person. So what's happening is that as a black woman, you can score under the black person category as well as under the specific category for black women. So the black people category does not exclude
black women. So in effect, you can argue that you know, if you only have board members that are black women, you'll score more points because you can count them twice. But if you only have male, you only count them once under the black people category. But it's also an issue that will we will note. Noting and reviewing and implementation.
I think it was just a phraseology.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Consumer education. The target, maintain the target, and if possible, increase it. I agree with that. And then the bonus point under management control, Honorable Kekana. Yes. We also know that, and we will discuss it when we do the review of the charter. Does this apply to all sector? Yes, it includes the entire value chain of the financial services charter. The 2%, Honorable Mantashe, yes, it's based on the national, we took what is in the employment equity in the national figure, we just imported it from there. Then the Honorable Manier, the issue of, on the impact assessment on growth and as well as jobs, as the council draft the codes, each and every item that has been included in the codes, there is a research conducted to determine the appropriateness of whatever target, as well as the impact that it will have on the sector. So the entire sector on each of the elements, when target have been set, are based on empirical evidence, are based on research, and also the potential impact that it will have on the sector. Some are just imported, obviously, from the general codes, based on what we as the DTI would have done research when we're drafting the general codes, but those that are specific for the financial sector, there is during the process of drafting, there is a process to ensure that there is proper assessment and research on how they will affect the sector and its growth. Now, in terms of the status of the sector code, the sector code has been endorsed by cabinet. What we are waiting now is for the minister to sign on the gazette, and once that has been signed, which is any time from now, the minister will sign on the gazette, and then we will have it gazetted, and it will be implemented from the date of gazette. In fact, almost on a daily basis, we are getting queries from the companies. They would like to transition to the new amendment. So as soon as the minister signs, we're hoping any time from now, then we will have it. We'll have it gazetted and published, and then it can be implemented. Now, in terms of the process to amend, the amendment of any sector code, remember, sector codes are developed by sectors, and then the process is driven by the council. So the Financial Service Council will be the one driving the process for the amendment, and in the council obviously have DTI represented, National Treasury, sector stakeholders, etc. And once the amendments are finalized, then they will have to go back to the minister for him to gazette those amendments. So that is how the process of amendment works in regard to the sector codes. Yeah, I think those were the issues that I wanted to respond to for now.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, Chair, I would like David to expand on what was the gist behind the questions, because I don't think he just wanted to know the processes of who amends the sector codes and so on. And he asked a specific question. That's why I'm interested to know what's behind the thinking. He asked whether a research has been made on the impact on the sector. And maybe Mr. Maputo should be giving him more information about how the sector council operates, because it's a team of experts that actually advises, that has always been advising the DTI in terms of how to adopt sector codes. So is it possible, maybe in 2 minutes, to give him more information? I'm very passionate about this, because the DTI, even how it's done the charter, has never done that without the prior consultation of this sector and taking into account their views, so that he sees that there's no economic risk to the decisions that are going to be taken, especially in this conjunction, and lay his fears in an event they such. That's why I wanted to know the gist behind, so that he tell us what is his own observations and reservations, so that they can be addressed as and when, because this is the most important part that we want as the committee to influence in terms of our report to be able, because there's going to be a time where we suggest an ultimatum of the implementation, having considered the availability of the 100 billion that's going to be allocated to the project. So I want us to be clear when we meet,
right,
all of us work together. Thank you.
I just thought before Mr. Maputa comes in on that and David comes in, could we just get the comment here from the Commission, Ms. Nguinia, Commissioner. Aneji, very quiet here, huh? Good. Indeed. Right, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. We have already provided our input. I think they were quite extensive. The only one that I will make for today is just on the issues of EMEs, because once you see alignment, and we still just concerned that there's an option for EMEs to be verified. We don't want to be giving that conflicting views to the markets. If we're going for no verification, it should be across the board.
The point we were just making here together as chairs, the critical thing is alignment, which will give consistency and certainty. But let's come in here on yourself, Honourable Mania.
Thank you, Chair. I'd just like to go back to my two original questions and then just ask a third question. You say that the Financial Sector Council, as I understand it, has conducted impact studies. So the question then is, what will the impact be on growth, investment, and jobs in the financial sector if this code is implemented? Especially given that one sector, the banking sector, as I understand it, is 49% foreign-owned. So that's the first question. The second question was the whole question of the financial sector charter and its status in law. Once the financial sector code is gazetted, what status does it have in law? In other words, is it a guideline? Is it subordinate legislation? What status does it have in law? Thank you for the describing how the code will be amended. And to just answer Tandi's question, her question is, well, why am I probing this issue? Well, the answer to that is, and I don't have a firm position on this, but essentially if we look at the insurance bill, we are asking the Prudential Authority, which is essentially the Reserve Bank, to make licensing decisions on the basis of a financial sector code, I'm not sure what its status in law is, that can be reviewed and amended arbitrarily almost by a financial sector council. and is signed off by a minister other than the minister under which the prudential authority falls. So I'm just, the real intention is to probe the facts more than anything else. But since we know, since a study has been done on the impact of the financial sector code on growth, employment, and investment, I'd be keen to hear what the impact is likely to be. Oh, and the last question is, once the code, the financial sector code is gazetted, it's obviously a deeply technical document, and my understanding is that subsequent to that, there would have to be a whole lot of technical annexures produced, which would assist stakeholders interpret the financial sector code. How long do you expect that to take, and when do you anticipate that technical document to be produced?
Thank you very much. I'm just looking around me in case there was any last one here, but right.
No, I'm not going to ask a question. I want us to come to the bottom of that after the response, because we tried to address those concerns, for instance, with Rob in this context, so that there's consistency with the application. But we'll come to that after the response.
I think everyone agrees there has to be alignment and consistency. I think those principles we agree on. But over to yourself then, Mr. Jacob Maputa.
Okay. Maybe just allow me to focus on in addressing the process and the status on slides 5 and 6. So to give context, we've got the BEE Act, which is an Act of Parliament. And then within the BEE Act then gives the Minister of Trade and Industry the powers to effect the Act through the Codes of Good Practice, which is the secondary legislation subordinate to the codes. The Act also allow for the sectors, various sectors of the economy, to say that if you are a sector and you feel that the generic codes are too broad for you, they don't address your sector-specific challenges, then as a sector, you are allowed to apply to the minister to say we would like to develop our own code of good practice. So that is the basis on which the financial services and other sectors are allowed to develop their own sector-specific code. And once those codes are gazetted, they have the same legal status because they are gazetted in terms of Section 9(1) of the BEE Act, and they have the same legal status as the Code of Good Practice. So entities in the financial sector then, when they get measured for their BEE compliance, when they trade amongst themselves, they use the financial service sector code and not the general code. So that is the status of the financial service code once it's gazetted. Now, further to that, the public entities that are operating in the sector, Section 10 of the Act compels them that when they enter into any economic activity with the private sector, they need to take into account a relevant code of good practice. Now, if you are now in the financial sector, a public entity in the financial sector, the relevant code of good practice is the financial service sector code, meaning that before you can issue a license, before you do any kind of procurement, concession, any economic activity, you need to ensure that one of the criteria or one of the requirement is that the entity that you are doing business with is in compliant with the financial services code. That is what the primary legislation, which is the Act, requires. So the Act the code give effects to the codes which is gazetted in terms of section 9.91 of the act. Now, in terms of the drafting of the financial code, as I mentioned, the minister is responsible for the drafting of the generic codes, which is applicable to all sectors of the economy. However, the act says that if the minister's code are not sufficient for you, you as the sector, not the minister, you as the sector, together with your line minister, develop your own code. So the financial service code was developed by the stakeholders in the sector. There's a representation of all sector stakeholders, including labor, private industry, as well as the line ministry, which is the Department of Finance. And further to that, before any sector code is gazetted, it must be endorsed by the line minister. To answer your question, why you're saying that, why should the minister who's not part of the sector, so he will not gazette any sector code, he will not gazette the financial service sector code if it's not supported by the Minister of Finance. It has to. The only powers, or the most powers that the Minister of Trade and Industry have is with regard to the process, the gazetting process. But in terms of the drafting of the actual document, the leading ministry is the Department of Finance.
Right.
National Treasure. The impact assessment, I might not have the figures from the top of my head in terms of the impact on growth and what, but the impact, focuses on the usual issues on how will the sector code, the issues that you mentioned, how will the sector code address transformation, inclusivity, of black entrepreneurs in the sector. How will the asset managers benefit? And then that is translated into targets, as we have seen, to say we think that it is possible to have at least 40% of procurement from the financial institution coming from black-owned entity. That research has been determined by the sector, and the sector agree that it is possible to be able to, to do that. And obviously, once you do that, that will translate into job creation, that will translate into other impacts within the value chain of the sector. So basically, that's the impact that when the sector apply for gazetting, they have to demonstrate how each of the deviations, how each of the provision in the sector code affect transformation, inclusivity within the sector, and how will that translate into job creation and other macroeconomic variables.
Thank you, Mr. Maputa. We just have another, well, just before you, please, Honourable Tabata. No, we've got to hear Honourable Kikani just coming in a little bit. I know, but this may be a follow-up.
Based on the explanation that Mr. Maputa is also giving forward, it also reminds me of something that I asked our chairperson yesterday on how we're going to approach the BEE code. And I'll give an example. Say it's Pinkiki Ghana Bank, and 40% of the bank is owned by, and 40% of my bank is owned by another institution abroad, which is a financial institution, or another bank, buy 40% from me. And the other 60% is, institutions also buy, but there are also individuals who buy. So when you are going to deal with the BEE code, what is going to be the approach? Because I am not sure that seated here currently, our BEE code also compels foreign companies to also comply immediately, your FDI element and all those things, whether there's work towards amending some of these things so that even multinational companies, as they come in, they comply to all those things and so on.
Now, thank you very much, Honourable Kakani. Honourable Tobias.
Chair, I don't want us to go to and fro because we're at a stage where we're trying to finalize the report, and some of the discussions are reopening the discussions we already had. But there's something I noticed. We've made a mistake. We should have asked Kaskovaria to be here when we're finalizing this portion of... I know my chairperson will not agree, but I'll tell you why I'm saying that. You see, having listened to Nikki from the JSC and the things she said in relation to stockbroking and asset management, and listening to what David is saying today, there's a desire in terms of members understanding why there's an importance of actually implementing the sector code. Actually, I wanted CAS to come and say, banks are actually excited to be compliant, because that's the impression I've been drawing all along. Because it gives them, it brings their scorecards up if they're compliant. And at no stage, in fact, if you look at the article that CAS wrote on this weekend's newspapers, it reinforces what we are doing. And it answers to that, because that's what I'm saying, we might have made a mistake by not inviting at this leg of finalization, because we're not reopening the engagement. We're looking at the feasibility. And I think Maputa explained the specific, how do you say this word, it's a very difficult, yes, on certain sectors in terms of how the codes will apply to them. So in an event that members of the DA doesn't understand how they're going to be implemented, maybe, Chair, as and when implementation takes place, a presentation should be made, including explaining what the legal standing of the gazetted code in relation to the BEE Act, because there's also a disjunction there in terms of the understanding of that. So I didn't want us to, you know, toss to and from, because we have come to a point where we're moving forward, and we want them to understand especially how they're going to apply specifically to different sectors in relation to high, and maybe we should highlight and list out those issues next time and then say, here are those issues. I'm trying to understand.
Yeah, no, that helps. See, can I just raise something in fairness, right? Obviously, because we are chairs, we have to listen 100% of the time if it's humanly possible. But we are opening up old issues.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of this, the last bit, with due respect to comrades and colleagues, we have discussed before. In the report, it's covered as well. But I realize if it's a 128-page report, it's not fair on an average member. The chairs are responsible, and Zakele and his team. We have to read it. But there are ways out. There's a simple thing we are conflating, I think. Many of these issues are there in the report, right? And they will be. Like, let's start with this, right? Firstly, Mr. Media, you talk about, I thought you would be happier with this, because there's nothing to hide. You saw it openly last week. There were two versions emerging from the ANC. When we say that all these conditions, licensing, etc., you must be linked to the targets in the FSC, there are members of the ANC who are not happy about it. They want to put into the law actual quotas. Or they want to... Yeah, now hang on, Maria, where are you going now? You see, because they now all I'm trying to say is this is the debate within the Alliance and the ANC, right? And EFF, right? EFF, look, comrade John, where I chair, my view is, and the majority is, whether it comes from the EFF or DA, if a point warrants merit, and often it's consistent with what the ANC would want, we take it into account. Doesn't matter, right? So EFF raised this thing. I've expressed my personal view as well, Pinky. We're no different. The three of us, by the way, Tandi, Pinky, and I, want some form or another actually in the legislation, not the specific quota, and say 25%, because it might change to 28%. Yeah. But we want the minister to have the power to regulate around it, right? So instead, what came up, and we discussed it in our own study group, and it's your position, is to say no, because the FSC is legally binding, right? With something that personally I don't think I understood, I must confess, until the interim report came out and then your commission wrote, you know, that thing, where you said, why? You see, comrades, I mean, really, Zakele, you should have helped us there. And where's your PA? Where's your researcher? You see, I did not understand personally. We say things, and all of us are complicit, right? It's embarrassing. We say that you need to regulate for the targets to be achieved. And BEC writes to us, but why do you want to regulate? It's already in the law. So basically, you've got what you want in a different form, except it's more negotiated through a financial sector charter. When I understood your documents, I read it four times, by the way. You gave us two, right? I read it again on Sunday evening, right? So what I'm saying to you is your document is very helpful. I don't know why we were fighting for so long within the ANC about it. She should have told us she's a former deputy minister. She should be fired as a former deputy minister, frankly. Can we just fire her? You could have told us that it's there in the law. So, basically, can we come to this? Mr. Mignon, you're right to draw it to our attention that it's being dealt with by the minister. But I had discussed this before, and we have discussed it. Actually, the minister and finance has to agree. So what you are saying is correct. But that is a compromise for what I think the DA would want and what some of us in the ANC would want. Actually, all three of us want it. I think maybe you... So that's it. We understand that. Secondly, it is legally binding. Thirdly, it's better that they manage changes to the target. So in the law, just like I was trying to convince comrades, you can't put percentages there because it will change. Mm. Now it's in the FSC code that it will change. So it could get higher and it could get lower. And that is legally binding on us in the law. So we're doing the right thing there that you guys have done, you know, on our prodding. The next thing to say, comrades, is straightforward, right? Once empowered, always empowered needs to be reviewed. Remember, this is all being done in the process to the summit and review, right? I think we should agree on that. On access to financial services, I think we want that changed. So we agree with you, Tandi. Tandi, please now. We've got to move on because we can sit here till 3.
No,
there's
Chair,
no need.
Chair, I'll tell you why I'm doing this.
Yeah.
Unati needs to answer David's question because David's question raised an issue that relates to the role of the Prudential Authority in terms of putting the codes for the insurance sector. And
that I thought that's the answer. All right, fine, we can ask
Nati. You see why I'm doing this.
Yeah,
you see,
fine. Okay, we agree with you. Can I just finish? Yeah, we agree. Fine, we'll ask Nati. So the next issue is, can we put the following into the report? Because there seems to be significant consensus, right, around it. One is once empowered, all is empowered needs to be reviewed, as you said. Can you give us a small paragraph on that today, please? Then the issue of access to financial services, we note that there's no bonus points. We want that matter reviewed, right? Then on the issue of female being for 30%, we would like that to be reviewed. I don't think, Comrade Mantashe, I know that Comrade Minister Susan Chabangu had in the public domain said that all employment equity must mean 50% black women. But I don't think that was passed. Eh?
No.
So while it's not the law, nothing stops the code from having it. So we would like to recommend what Tandi says, make it 40%. Mm-hmm. I hear what you're saying, Mr. Maputa, that if you're black and you're female, it's great, but that doesn't answer the question. Because even white women in certain circumstances, what's wrong? Even privileged white women, rather than privileged white men, should be in those positions. So I don't think that's a fair answer, Mr. Maputa, with due respect. I think what Tandi says, female, 40%. Then on the issue of consumer education, the point Tandi makes is there, but Zakele and I and the Chair will strengthen it. So can we agree on that? We'll strengthen it. I mean, she's experienced it yet again, the abuse, right? Many people do, right? Then on the issue of ATM machines, it's there, but can we, Zakele, can we put in a line that says more ATM machines? Sorry, you want to say something on ATM machines? Yeah. What's that?
I was talking about incentivizing. It's not there.
Incentivizing is not there. Good. Okay, the point is made. Incentivizing, Zakele?
Yes, I think on the issue of accessibility of ATMs, you could also put the issue of cost, because you could have ATMs, but if it's expensive to use them, it's not going to be used. Yeah.
what will happen if my attending that conference in Washington is to go by 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks? It's actually, no, it's not funny. It's remarkable what is going on. Look at India, right? I don't want to cover that ground. Oh, by the way, Alan, I have to do my report on that conference. We have to adopt it next week. Remind me. Two, 3 pages, tell you what came, because I have to report to you. But look, basically, with digital banking and fintech and so on, I think ATM machines will slowly get de-emphasized, right? And I think even more for the poor and economically disenfranchised, they will probably use their cell phones more rather than go to ATM machines. But nevertheless, we'll say something, bearing in mind the ascendancy of fintech and digital banking, the committee still feel that, you know, the point that... No, I know all of that, man. But the thing is that it's beginning to happen in the remotest parts of India. What's so special about our country that we can't do it, right? So basically, let's go on. We're saying taking into account both trends, fintech, slow digital banking, and the need for ATM machines. We're not counterposing them. Then on the issue of people with disabilities, Comrade Mantashe, as I remember the equity legislation, it does say 2%, right? But there's nothing stopping us from, so we can say, Zakile, can you draft something, man, quickly, rather than me doing it? I've got 1,000 things. Send me all these comments later today and today at the 2 chairs. Something about bearing in mind that the law does say 2%. We think more should be done. Then the issue about EME has to be verified. Sorry?
Winding up now.
Yeah, okay, fine. Can you give us something on EME has to be verified and consistent? Can you give us a paragraph on that, right? We can agree on that. On the socioeconomic impacts and so on, Mr. Mania is right to raise it, but you're never going to get precise figures, right?
Yeah.
And we have to manage different imperatives, growth, jobs, and transformation. It's the same issues we're discussing in the entire financial sector regulation. So I think we should add stuff from the slide presentation. And on the issue that Pinky raises, you see, what we have got in the report, and we should move on to the report because it'll answer some of the questions. The report talks about majority black, particularly African ownership of the South African component. The reason we do not enter the multinational side is because, and it applies especially now with the MTBPS and the fiscal framework and 50.8 billion under targeting and so on, we are actually having to be careful. We have to be careful. No, we have to be careful, Tandi. You say this in many ways, so I'm not saying anything you don't agree. Anything you don't agree, so what? We can disagree. We have to be careful about, given our savings and so on, we have to be careful about the way we manage the foreign investment ownership of banks. On the other hand, when they go to China, they meet the requirements of Chinese law. But of course, they can afford to because they got billions. Similarly here, I think you should answer Pinky's question. You've answered it before. It's actually in the report. But can you give us your answer? What are the proposals around managing the banking ownership by the foreign investors? We're not saying we don't want them all. We're not saying we don't want them. That's what Pinky's saying, right? We're not saying we don't want them. But we want to know to what extent and why are they meeting the requirements of our legislation. Is that what you're more or less asking? Yeah. We're not saying before anybody picks up that we don't want them, okay? But they also have to meet the law. Then on the issue of BASA, obviously we invite BASA, then we have to invite APSIP, we have to invite B. We cannot invite one sector easily without balancing it. I don't know about COSATU and everybody. But the point you are making, if it's of any value, we went to report to BASA on the... No, I mean, it's correct. We went to report to BASA in an interesting panel, which had Duma Kubule, right, from Msunduzi and so on, you know, the BE guy, you know him, right?
Yeah.
They were all there. Interestingly, at that BASA thing, I think Dandy's right. Mr. Mania doesn't speak for the Banking Association. I mean, that's his constituency, but actually, they take us more seriously than the DA, right? We don't want to go into that. That is a fact. Yeah, it's fine. So basically, okay, let's not fight. The point I'm trying to make is Tandy is absolutely right. There's YED and his colleague whose name I forget, right? The thing is, sometimes you find DA members protecting the banks, where the banks themselves don't need that protection, right? So on that issue of the banks, they will be brought here for other issues, and we can raise it then. But we have got a provision in the law, I mean in the report, sorry, which says they must report. Not just them, everybody, right? Report as regularly. We got joint meetings twice a year, and we've got our own quarterly meetings, blah, blah, blah. So Tandy's right. So I'm suggesting, colleagues, with greatest of respect, we don't have to sit here till 3 o'clock. The Finance Committee would like to look at the projected fiscal framework, and we could finish by 1, quarter past 1, or even sooner. So we are where we are. This is report 1. Report 2 will address the issues. From what I can see, Mr. Maputa, with due respect to everybody, and the comrade chair will say, there's one question. Answer Pinky's question. What are you doing about foreign investment in banks? To what extent are they meeting the law, and why? Apart from that, we need to move to the report now.
Well, the legislation doesn't discriminate, obviously, between foreign owned and locally owned. They all treated the same. So a bank operating in South Africa, they have to meet the law, except for the ownership element, where they are given an option of either doing the normal equity ownership or doing what we call equity equivalent. If their global policy preclude them from selling equity in the country and elsewhere in the world. So that's the only area where they are given a special dispensation. And how they do it is that they have to use at least 25% of their value of operation in South Africa to do a some kind of a program. It could be supporting a black industrialist, doing enterprise and supply development, or doing critical skills development, similar to what the Microsoft have done, wherein they'll be developing about 7 black-owned, software producers. They are doing that under the unbid of the equity equivalent. But for all the other elements, there's no discrimination, or they have to comply with the same legislation that South African companies have to comply with. I'm not sure if that okay.
Albania.
Thank you, Chair. My view on the banks is captured in my speech on the nationalisation of banks, and safe to say, it was not mild and it was critical. You're welcome to look at my take a look at my speech. My question on the relating to the impact study, it seems your gentleman is drifting off. So that's on my position on the banks. The question about the impact, I just want to be clear, and we don't need to spend time traversing this point. It seems that the Financial Sector Council, or the relevant body, has done an impact study, or various impact studies on how the financial sector code will impact on the objectives of the code, but have not done an impact study on the overall impact of the code on the financial sector in respect of growth, investment, and employment. Is that correct?
No, that's not correct. The impact study covers everything, including the impact on the microeconomic variables. Yes.
And why is it not possible to tell us what the impact will be?
Now everyone's doing their own thing.
No, Chair, but why, just a minute,
Honourable Tobias. We've got 3 of you on the floor at one time. Hold on there, please, Honourable Mania.
Do you know why are you allowing David to do this? David wants to imply that if we implement this sector code, it's going to have an impact on the economic growth and so on. It's a false perception, and it has been clarified, and you keep on towing to and from and disputing what Mr. Maputa has said. He's been political, and if that's the case, we should take him on politically.
All right, now I hear where you are coming from, and I'm sure you hear that as well, Honourable Mania. We've had an explanation, maybe an explanation not everyone concurs with, and I think that's really where we are here. So have you finished with your explanation then? Because I've understood you were right. And I see the commissioner nodding vigorously there for you, Ms. Nguyenya. Right. On that particular note, the chairperson, Karim, had indicated to all of us that we need to move towards the main report. Isn't that correct? And we, at that point, like to thank you, Ms. Nguyenya, and yourself too, Jacob. Thank you very much. I'm handing over now.
Again, I think we should note that look at the people who are speaking for DTI, quite young. And again, you know, it makes one feel very positive and very competent. Now, it's a very good, you know, for my generation, the can't speak, Tanvi is like you, young, right? The point is, for my generation, meaning the comrade Cheya and me, it's very nice to see young people adroit in responding. There's one outstanding issue, Unati. Tanti wants to hear from you because she loves hearing your voice. Question, Unati.
Thank you, Chair. I'll try to be brief. So we don't want to say outright that it's unworkable for the PA to consider compliance with the codes in considering licensing decisions and so on. But we do think that we should have a focused discussion in the context of the insurance bill on the enforcement mechanisms and how we align taking enforcement actions with non-compliance on non-prudential issues on a prudential entity, because it is something that is going to be quite new for how we conduct supervision and take enforcement action. So we don't want to say it's not possible, but it's new, and there might be a serious potential conflict. If you are a prudential regulator who takes enforcement action and other types of actions emanating from non-prudential concerns on a prudential entity. So I think we have to definitely have a conversation in the context of the insurance bill. Thank you.
On Tuesday, we can sort that out. It's not a big deal. This is Parliament, and finally, we have a right to decide, unless you show us there's something unconstitutional in what we say.
Yeah.
Right?
To just lay the fears, we said that there's specific wording that we're going to wed when we're talking about the role of the prudential authority in relation to enforcement and how it's going to be done. So that's specific. It's just that I don't have the paragraph here with me. I'm not as clever as it is.
Right. Yes. We can look at it Tuesday, we meet.
Yeah, so
we can look at it.
Come
but on the policy, the ANC has taken a decision here.
Chair, and can you
yeah.
be there when we...
No, he will be there. You or somebody else, but we prefer you. The second thing to say is that on the insurance bill, if the prudential authority cannot do that job, somebody else has to do it. So we're asking you to apply your mind and come here on Tuesday. We're not having an endless discussion now. And the report is a guide now for voting on the insurance bill next Tuesday. It's in the House debate the following Tuesday, 28th, okay? Because Parliament rises, I think, on the 29th, end of 29th or end of the 30th. And we cannot keep a bill here for more than 2 years. And the NCOP is breathing down our neck. So at this late stage, and you remember we've spent hours and hours on this. Even now I'm a bit surprised how much we're having discussions, right? So in short, my friend, the policy I don't think we'll review unless you come with an overwhelming argument, find ways of compromises. You and Treasury. Come with proposals. Okay, colleagues, can we turn to the bill, to the report? You got it on Friday afternoon, so you've had plenty of time, Friday at 10 past 7 in the evening, rather. I'm just going to take you through the tracking parts, and only those that impact on policy, not others, right? So, on the first one, we are now calling this the first report, point 1.1 on page 6. Have you got the one with red tracking, right? Right. On the first page, you will see it's got in red, right? It's got it in red, right? So then can we move to 1.1? It simply explains this report. The points have been covered already. It's not a final report as such, but we can't call it an interim report because we've had an interim report. So it's a first report. There'll be a second report next year after the summit, right, is concluded. And we say there, the report will review the point Tandy makes. We are having a program of action evolving, where if she likes, she can have Basa there and so on. It's no problem. Then we go to the observations and recommendation side. Now, Zakiria managed almost solely, although we checked, Comrade Joan and I, the first section where what we did, colleagues, we went through all the submissions, both the chairs, and we checked what Zakiria had done, and we added a few things here and there. All we did is people must speak for themselves. It's not for Zakiria and me and Joan to summarize. So they wanted changes to their submissions. It's an overview of their submissions. We didn't interfere with it. Like Zakiria, we just did it exactly as they wanted it. We reduced some of it because otherwise it would be unfair that some people are getting so much and some people are getting less. So we tried to have the paragraphs more or less evenly when it came to non-statutory bodies, right? The statutory bodies, obviously, they have a right to speak fuller. So let's go to observations and recommendations. They're on page 92. Right, part 10, 92, right. Now, here, on page 93, all we're simply saying in 12.1 is what we've just said. And we explain that there are recommendations here that we want implemented immediately, there are recommendations here that must go into the review process of the FSC, and there are recommendations that will emerge in the summit. There are some things on which we cannot take final decisions. We want the summit to resolve it, failing which we will take decisions on it and hold the executive to account in regard to that. Okay, so 12.2 on page 94. Go to 95, actually, 12.2.3. Now, we simply note what stakeholders say, implying we agree with them, right? Sorry? What did I say? Yeah, all of that we'll clean up, no problem. Okay, very impressive, Tandy. Okay, so now we go to page 96. Yes, it's very interesting. The Charter Council, on the top, just to note this, right, said that when people report, it's disproportionately the larger entities that are reporting. Because they only have the resources. So we said, no, have the small entities to report, right? That's a minor thing. It's not fair to treat the BEEC, please, Ms. Ngwenya, in the same way we accepted your point, we adopted it. They are arguing, the FSC has been around for a long time, the Charter Council. We just created in June 2016. It's not fair to say that we are not performing. It's too soon to say it. So we agree and we separated that issue. So there you are, Ms. Ngwenya. Tell Ms. Ntuli that we were intimidated by her and we made that change.
Now, but Chairperson, I think it was not just in relation to that, because sector councils are supposed to monitor and get those reports.
Ah, yes, that's another reason. Thanks, that's helpful. 12.29 on page 98 is just change of wording, right? And we now, for the first time, the Chair of Finance must admit we didn't realize it's compulsory in terms of Section 9 of the BBBE Act, right? And Tandy failed to tell us. No. Now, here it is. This is the issue related to the ownership issues we just discussed, and I'll read it to you, right? It's on 12.2.10, page 99. Banks and financial institutions, it is argued, we're not saying we wholly agree, it is argued, are very different from other types of companies. Banks have a promise to pay obligation. They are required to repay their depositors on demand. To ensure that they are able to repay on demand, they hold capital reserves and liquidity reserves. The liquidity reserves they have to hold are directly related to the type of deposits they have. In terms of Basel III, banks are required to hold enough liquidity to meet their expected outflows for a month, known as liquidity coverage ratio. This can be quite different. For example, Standard Bank held 35.9 billion. Where's Pinky? She wants to own a bank, right? She needs to know that. In liquidity. This protects depositors. Now, comrades, we can't say 2008 was dreadful for the depositors, who suffered, the bank's greed. That's why we've got the new Twin Peaks legislation, to stop the banks doing abusive things and getting away. And on the other hand, we're saying, no, we must reduce the liquidity rate. No. We have got a proportional proposal on proportional regulations. This protects depositors in case they want their money urgently and protects the bank from a bank run. In addition, a bank must hold sufficient capital to protect depositors when the bank fails. Capital is set by the regulator depending on the riskiness of the particular bank's business. Now here it is. If a bank lends unsecured, then it needs to hold more capital. If a bank mainly lends... Fine, we can tighten that. I mean, really, I mean, you're being like, you know... Can you do it, please? Okay, can we mandate you to do it? Okay, can you know Tandy will do that? If a bank lends unsecured, it's a comma. If we put a comma there, it's fine. Grammatically, it's fine, but we can have this discussion offline. If a bank lends unsecured, can you put a comma there? Then it needs to hold more capital. If a bank lends for mortgages, comma, put a comma there, Zakela, it has to hold less capital because the underlying houses provide the security, obviously. Capital cannot be obtained in the form of a loan. It must be cash known as unencumbered capital because it is free of a loan. We know this sort of stuff, right? The capital must come from the bank's owners, blah, blah, blah. Big banks have built this capital. We know all that. This means that the capital has been gradually accumulated over time, and it's very difficult for private sector people to buy shares in a bank, blah, blah, blah. We've covered all that before. We just put... Now, this is the point. We note what the BEE Commission says. I mean, Mr. Maputa covered this, right? That you can have exemptions, the minister must agree, and there must be evidence for that, right? But now the main point we are making, and this is it, in 12.12.10, we are saying the committees recommend that NT, DTI, the Financial Sector Charter Council, and BEEC, that's your commission, Ms. Nguyenia, through engagements among them, let me sort out your differences, among them, and through the summit process, address their differences on the disparities between the FSC and the generic codes and present a single report to the committees within a month after the summit. Where's Pinky? The committees will thereafter decide on its own positions. We haven't decided. We'll then decide to what extent the specificity of the financial sector warrants the disparities with the generic codes and whether the substitutes for them are adequate. I don't understand what you mean, blue. Yeah, no, that's the form we've taken it. So, I mean, it appears like that because of the color coding. But the point we want to make is maybe we should add something, having received concrete proposals here, that when you have this engagement, Zakila, please note this, they must also take into account, we said elsewhere, but make it clear, that our own recommendations here. And we want a single report, not two reports and three reports, my friend. Where's Treasury? Not, we want one report, you tell us where you differ. Can somebody just help me? We've got a pen on you. Yeah, we said 1 month after the summit. There's a time frame there. 1 month after the summit. I read it out to you yesterday, Tandy, please, man. It's a deadline, it's there. 1 month. We don't know when the summit will be. We would like it to be by April, but we can't dictate to the executive. So recommendations, right? Of the committee. Zakir, you noted that, right? Okay. Then it's related to the next point. That's why I'm taking you through all of it. Now, we're saying 12.12.11. Achieving the targets should be a condition of the licensing of financial institutions. There's nothing particularly new here, Tandy. It's as provided for in Section 10.1 of the BEE Act, right? So it's nothing new, right? Mr. Maputa, right? Yeah. I don't know why we hadn't worked that out earlier. The next point is, now this is a point that Tandy loves. There have to be effective punitive fees for the failure of financial institutions to achieve the targets. Sorry, I'm on page 101. The BEEC needs to develop a system of effective fines and present a policy on this by June 2018. Now, can you explain? We are told you don't have a system of fines. As Tandy and others will tell you, Nacha, quickly, it's that, you know what banks do? They factor in. Financial institutions factor in fines. So they do wrong things, gain profits, and then they pay a small fine, like this bank collusion story. Yeah. Minister Patel raised the issue. Can we have an endless discussion, right? Can we just cover it? Can I propose unless you rule me out, let's go further. Let's not have a roundabout discussion. So we are told by your own department or somebody else that you do not have a system of fines. We have punitive fines. And you have the authority to fine people, is that right?
No, the Act has got penalties, but we are not the ones who can come up with the fines. The Act does stipulate what the fines should be, but then it has to go through the criminal process because you don't have a tribunal like your competition commission.
Tandi, can you deal with the concrete issue? Let's not have discussions we had before. Thank you.
Chair,
Tandi and Pinky.
Chair, let me illustrate for those who will not have an idea how it works. In terms of the competition commission, they have a tribunal, but I've always even questioned the decisions of the tribunal where they come to a determination of a 10% fine in an event that there's collusion. And I've argued then and I'm arguing now.
But can you just say what you propose now?
Chair, yeah. I propose that a tribunal should be established to determine those punitive fines that needs to be implemented. And I don't know, we need a very strong wording. I'm not an expert of English words. To emphasize, because I want us to go beyond what the Competition Commission Tribunal has put as a precedent. They put a very low determination fee as a fine that actually is budgeted for all the time. I don't want to regurgitate the point, but I'm saying let's make a concrete suggestion of establishment of a tribunal. It can be
just
put to a test if it works or not.
Yeah. We want to vote on this report, right? At this late stage, do you want to make such big leaps? Let's get some understanding of what the issue in the law is, and we can say consideration needs to be given. What we really want... let them make a suggestion. That's a useful thing, Picky.
Chair, you remember yesterday I was saying to you... You doesn't mean you as an individual. Okay? That even if we are putting in those punitive measures, how do we make sure that those penalties are not paid for by the customers themselves? Because it is possible that when we penalize, it is customers themselves through whatever fees that banks are able to. So it's one thing that I thought...
Very up. Sorry, I forgot. With due respect to you, I should have remembered you had said that, and we said we'll put it in. And I forgot to do last night. I forgot. Okay, so I'm human. What time did you get it? At 10 to 2 or something in the morning. Zakela, what time did you get it? About 1:15 to look at. What was it? What time did I was sitting here in Parliament, by the way. I left here at 10 to 2. Right, let's not get into that. Can you help us? No, I'm ruling now because really we're getting around in circles. Can you help in this regard? Just tell us in a nutshell what you can and cannot do. You mean that literally there's a number in the law how much people must pay if they do not achieve the target? It actually gives an amount. Or does it say the minister regulates the amount?
No, for now the legislation talks to non-compliance. It doesn't talk about people not reaching their targets, so which is why you even get up to level 8. A company can still be a level 8 and... Yes. And also for us to say once you increase or do whatever, you have to amend the legislation because currently the legislation says up to 10%, but then you have to go through your magistrate court, so...
Can we propose an amendment to the Act then? You propose an amendment to that. Zakele, can we mandate you because she can't?
No, Chair, you can't make policy decisions here. You know that.
You introduced it to the tribunal.
I said they must make a recommendation. Then you are taking... Because you are going further.
No, colleague, can we make this clear? I never said they must do it. It will be worded softly. Consideration needs to be given. On the need to amend the BE, whatever act it is, to consider, right, this thing. Bearing in mind, that's how we word things. I mean, look at the report, it's very carefully crafted. People don't read, though they have 5 days to read. They don't read, and then they come here and read. It's not fair to the two of us and Zakele, right? We work till early hours of the morning. We give people, you got it on Friday evening, comrades. All you have to do is read the red sections, not the whole 128 pages. But Mr. Mayne didn't read it either, if that's any consolation. Now then, we incentives are amended. Projected fiscal came out at 8:30 when I phoned him at 9. He hadn't read it. I'm going to report him to Mr. Steinhaus. Sakela, can you grasp something along those lines? Could that help us? Consideration needs to be given to reviewing, and then we bring in the issue of customers, the point that Pinky said. And how do you prevent that? But we are acutely aware of that, right? What always happens, Tandy, you know the thing. As soon as you increase fees... Yeah, fine. So, Zakela, can you drop something there, right? We're agreeing on that. Then, there's a new section that I must read to you. Funnily enough, it came up from Pasa. I had to go into a seminar. Mr. Lees ended up there. I don't know how. He just walks into it without any... I was invited, but I don't know how he got there, but let's not discuss that. But anyway, he was there and confirmed. The interesting thing Pasa said, it's interesting, eh? Cass said, her favorite person, Cass said, yeah, Eunice, you know what? You people want us to change, right? But you have no end vision. Where are you wanting the financial sector to be 10 years from now? Can you give me your vision? Very funny. So then I was surprised that the summit is not dealing with those issues and so on. So here it is. I'm going to quickly read you through this. We've added one more section there. Right. So they didn't say anything. They left it to us. And so we agreed that in this report we'll put something. It's correct, Pinky. We don't have an end vision. And it's astonishing that neither DTI nor National Treasury through the summit process has done that. Where's the comment from the Charter Council? Sorry? Yeah, I saw that. That's been removed. There's another version coming for you. By the way, there's yet another version coming to you now. It's an amendment we made last night. They're minor, they're grammatical and other.
See,
there
Chair,
needs to be
Chair,
a vision.
Chair, I'm going to remind you that I asked Patrice Musuba to start the bank and he's going to be launching it in 2018. So you can't say there's no end vision, but I'll engage on that.
Okay. That's not enough of a vision. We don't just want to de-racialize. We want to also reduce inequalities, right? There needs to be a vision of what the financial sector should look like in future and by when. This is what we're asking the summit to do. My friend, Mr. Maputa, this one, we are writing to the ministers, right? Can you remind me to write to the ministers? John will draft a letter between us. This is outrageous. It hasn't been addressed. This needs to be addressed through the summit process and taken forward by our committee in our next report. For now, the committee believes that there should be a diversified and more competitive financial sector comprising private, cooperatives and state banks. That's EFF's words, right? Yeah, these are EFF's words. They are here. These should take various forms and include specialized or monoline meaning focusing on one area, banks such as savings banks, mortgage banks, and mutual banks. FinTech can support that the growth, and they can operate either electronically without bricks or mortar, or using FinTech to deliver cheaper and faster services. Or as FinTech companies, I can't read anymore this slide, and other non-financial institutions offering banking services, especially payment and credit through a technology platform. State banks should provide more affordable service, particularly for customers that are neglected by private banks. Customer-owned banks, such as mutual cooperative credit union and saving banks, should play a more important role as they are not loaned on profits per se, but are generating wealth for their customers while at the same time providing banking services for them. The existence of a variety of banks and bank ownership regimes should provide for more competition and diversification. Regulatory requirements should differ. Now, are you listening, Mr. Unati? Regulations should differ depending on the systemic risk that banks' assets and liabilities pose for the whole financial system. Requirements for their registration should differ, reducing barriers to entry. Now, it's linked to the next point. Then we'll deal with it. The next point is turnover, colleagues, to... Okay, on page 102, 1233, we note the growth fund, a value of 100 billion, which is not in the current code, but, it's there. Now, we will have to then not say later that we don't accept, like, empowerment financing. That has to fall away now, Zakela, that paragraph. Let's go to 1237.
Yebo.
That's nothing relevant. It's what the JSC said, not... Yeah.
Do we have the power to suggest that this money should also be utilized... Including purchasing of shares. Is it our call to come to that determination? Of the inclusion of purchasing of shares. Is it our call?
Just let me ask Mr. Maputa. You heard what Tandy said. Firstly, does it provide for purchasing of shares? It does. Okay, so you are covered, right? Okay, it's covered. Okay. In that case, we go to...
Can we have the wording?
Transaction financing.
Okay. 12.3.12.1. Now, here it is, right? Unati, it's consistent with what National Treasury is also saying, so I don't know where the regulator is in this regard. We are saying that, firstly, we reaffirm that we think the South African ownership of banks should over time be in black hands and appropriately represented by women in ownership positions. And then we go on, sorry? Particular, yeah. 12, can I tell you what the proposal is? You need to know, by the way, in fairness. At the conference in December, we're going to say the NDR seeks to address itself to the needs and interests of blacks in general, Africans in particular, and Pinky Kekane more specifically. And she expects the study group members who are there. And excluding Mr. Meany at all costs, I will be at. So now, I'm telling you, something happened to Mr. Meany this weekend. He's gotten up on the right side of it. He's been very cooperative, right? Yeah. We're having reading him. Woo! I don't know what's wrong. Maybe it's the Christmas cheer and fervor that's descending on him earlier. He's been extremely cooperative, extremely rational for once, outside, offline, you know? So let's go to...
I was also surprised about how Topman behaved yesterday on his...
What did he say? I wasn't there.
No, he was very naughty on the podium.
Yeah, what did he say?
Like he was influenced by this one.
Yeah, Mr. Meany told him you're too soft and, you know, they praise you too much, so we're very suspicious of you. So that's why. Right. Okay. Can you get moving to 12.3.12.1? Right. We have now spoken 12.1. Page 104, the very last paragraph at the bottom, says, legislative changes to allow for proportional entry requirements for new entrants to support progressive growth from an informal entity like a stock producer to become a small player becoming larger. The capital adequacy ratios, requirements for banks that are not systemically important financial institution be lower. We recognize though that appropriate minimum standards should apply so that the depositors' interests are protected. I mean, we want to stress this. It is particularly the poor and low-income groups who suffer disproportionately when banks collapse, and easing of requirements cannot be at their expense. On the other hand, Tandi, you raise this all the time, and here it is, concerns about depositors, while absolutely important, should not be used as an excuse not to encourage new entrants into the market. It's linked to 12.3.12.2. Compliance with the FSC be a condition for licensing. 3, the FSC require that the South African ownership of banks within reasonable time frame be mainly black, particularly African-American ownership by women. 4, the FSC require that within certain time frames, blacks, particularly Africans, be the majority at all levels. This is the sort of things you've raised, right? It's actually here. It says we want this done, right? Engaging with stakeholders to legislate where appropriate on these and other relevant proposals. Now, here it is, Mr. Unati, my brother, calm down. There's nothing here that is too outlandish. In fact, it is softer than what the majority in the ANC wants, let me tell you. Now, he's very good. I shouldn't say that because the governor might decide you're being co-opted by the committee and then you will get marginalized, never appearing before this committee. The committee believes that SARB needs to do far more, Nati, please, man, don't argue with this thing, to encourage competition in the financial sector, and we'll engage with you in this regard. So that's exactly the same provisions we got for insurance on the next page. And then 12.3.17, you'll be pleased to see this, Tandi and Pinky. The committee on page 107, 12.3.17, the committee notes that linking the BEE transformation with licensing is a requirement of section. We're saying it again. Nobody told the chair of finance to make my life easier. And before Mr. Meany gets excited, I picked up the OF last night. It should be OF of the BEE Act. And every organ of state and public entity, the point Andy made earlier, has to apply any relevant code of good practice, the point Mr. Maputa made earlier, in terms of the Act in licensing and others. It's not an option, it's in the law. The committee urges them to do so and for Parliament to hold them to account. So it's not in the law, it's that they don't implement, right? Then, SCOF concluded that the licensing obligations of stock, well, that's not really relevant to this point, it just emphasizes that there are new stock exchanges. So that's on ownership and licensing. It's very consistent with the discussion we had here. I'm asking for, we're asking the two chairs for approval of this.
Mm-hmm.
Is that agreed? Then the rest is straightforward. What's next? The rest is minor. That is a big issue, which I think the earlier discussion helped us on. 1245 page comments on 108. We just note what the commission said, so it's not a policy issue. On 1110, we added that fintech and digital banks can contribute significantly to reducing the reducing fees, encouraging competition, and ensuring greater financial inclusion. We are interested to see how Time Digital performs. Fintech also needs to be made more use of in the insurance sector. This is what the insurance sector requested. We put it in. That's a thing we should have thought about. On repossessions, there's no, the thing that Mr. Advocate Shaw said, so I'll put it into the version you're going to get in a moment, right? The committees recommend that the issues around repossessions also be addressed as soon as possible. The Charter Council gave this thing. Go to page 113, 1269, in red, you'll see. The committee recommends that the issues around repossessions also be addressed as soon as possible by the Charter Council, which is planning to do so in its review of the Council's affording housing standards.
Right, fine.
So we forgot to put that, and I think we put it in based maybe on your input. I can't recall who said what, we just put it in. The rest is minor. Go to page 117. Yeah, on asset management, we strengthened it. Go to asset, we know the thing. There's nothing further I can think of, Comrade Jones, except we added in your point about illicit financial flows.
Yes.
In 1216, we just put it in there, although our committees need to meet in early quarter next year to take things forward. Then we'll actually change 1219 based on what we've adopted, and then the program of action is crucial, and so on. So there's a related thing. Can you distribute the one we gave last night? Beauty, where are you? Yeah. Now, there's some minor amendments based on submissions by the ANC last night. You will recall I sent it to the ANC comrades to look at, but we had to send it to the committee this morning. The first one deals, Beauty, quickly, please. When can I help you?
There was just one other thing there on that Chairperson Karim, 12.16. The other thing we also asked, but maybe there was another view in the Finance Committee later, 12.16, illicit financial flows. We also proposed that the tax office, you know, there's this principle, evasion and avoidance, and one is illegal, for it to be considered there, and the SARS were considering it, and then we heard nothing more about it. So I don't know now what's happened.
Yeah, let me just give you a brief on that. The problem there is a legal one, right? We've raised this thing, you'll recall, in finance when we meet SARS. There's a concept, I mean, Zakir, you have to help us, right? There's a concept called legal tax avoidance.
Yes.
And what people do is they consult with all these major like PwC et al, and then they wriggle around the law. That is an inherent thing. You can do nothing. You just got to keep, every time you, am I right, Sakele? Every time you cut the loopholes, yeah, they. So when I went to this conference in December last year, even in the established industrialized world, they have a similar problem. But tax evasion, that is something that's illegal, and you've got to tackle that more decisively. And that's what we're going to put a line in there. But can you help, Zakir? Am I right? Have I got it right?
There was a paragraph that we formulated in relation to illicit financial flows. You see, it's not tax avoid; it's illicit financial flows, where we said banks should be able to monitor. And I just want to remember the exact words, because we said they must detect, that's the word we used, detect and report on suspicious transactions. So to amplify this point, that's what we need. Yeah? So can I say, help?
No, I'm saying banks are already reporting elite,
As I can. You see, there's a suspicion that money left South African shores and it's sitting somewhere in other countries. And you can't say that. There is a bank somewhere that did not report this. And I'm not, I know I'm making an insinuation until I can provide proof which bank somewhere. That's why certain countries are investigating their banks, whether it has money there. You see, there's a reason why I want it to be said under this.
Thing with everything, Tandy. We have put there the last line says, colleagues, just notice, financial sector has to do far more to tackle IFS. Now, what more you want us to do?
Well, that's so soft, Chief.
Okay, what do you want to put in there? Fine. Okay, make a proposal, Chair.
Yeah. The financial sector has to consider stronger measures, not must do far more.
Okay, fine.
I mean, hell, that's an armchair.
All right. Stronger measures to...
Why is the girl go to school if he's not going to help us to say something about...
I thought you said there's no need for him. Zakele. You discussed this thing in a previous committee. We're covering ground we've covered in our joint meetings and our meetings. But fine, repeat what you've said previously and again now.
On illicit financial flows, it's a very fluid concept, this one of illicit financial flows, because there is no criminal offense which is called illicit financial flows in our criminal code. But my suggestion before was you need to define what you mean by this, and legislate it, put it perhaps in the Prevention of Organized Crime Act, so that you are clear about what, yeah.
Right. Can you agree with that? Good, fine, okay. Yeah, fine. Yeah, fine, we're putting it in, okay, good. Right, then you've got the latest version. Now, comrade, can we please not attack the chairs, not attack Beauty and Teboho and whoever else, they can do nothing. They could not print this in color, right? So there's nothing we can do, but there's so few amendments that it's going to be very easy to do. The first one now is a clean copy, so all you've got to do is, these were done last night, right? And you will remember the ANC where it comes from, right? Those three amendments, I sent it to you. Yeah. Now, basically the first one you will find, can you help me? I can't see very well. Alan, where are they? With this lack of color. The first one will be around... Yeah. Yeah, he hasn't got color. There's one there. Oh, I can see it on my screen. Right, it's very easy to see on my screen, right? Yeah, no, it's fine. Well, no, it's fine. The point is that we will be writing, as if we haven't got enough to do, to the Secretary of Parliament to insist that now that we're moving to a tracking system from January next year, we must have color. Ridiculous. Parliament doesn't have color in this thing. All right, so it's easier for me to look on my screen and I'll direct it to you. Don't laugh here. Can you all pay for it? Tracy, can't you just pay for it? It'll actually help. Use your budget. You can't do it, but just do it. Sickening, really. Right. So I'm going to open this thing quickly now. Look at the time wasting.
Yeah, look.
Right, Google Drive.
The house is 2 o'clock today.
No, but we're sitting till 3.
Wait, I've got...
Look at your program. We'd like to end, but you guys, you'll ask questions all the time and make comments, and then you see we can't sit here. There's no choice. No choice.
Are we going to get bonus?
Well, what about me? I left here at 10 to 2 this morning. Let's start with that. Okay. So, have you got it on screen? Oh, but I can't use your computer. Okay. Right. Here we are. I've got it. So the first change, colleagues, you'll find on... there's nothing I can see here until we get to observations and recommendations.
That's where I am.
Yeah, so it's a new one you got, which has got no color coding, right?
Yeah.
So you're going to page, 12, right? So the first change, the minor things like FSC, we changed into financial, that Zakelia did in early hours of this morning. Thank you once again. So we are going to 12.110. And all we've done is, colleagues, notice in line 3, we've said several, not some, several of the committees, that's a minor thing, right? So I'm not going to go through that. But the one I want to draw attention to is the one that, and I juggled, well, we juggled a paragraph around, but the one I want to draw your attention to is at the bottom of, yes, here it is. 12-7, colleagues.
12-7.
The version you got is page 91, 12-7. 91. right? You'll find it there. Have you got it?
Some of it's page 93.
This one has just been printed now. We all got the same one. No.
The numbers are the same.
Right. 12 to 7. We've now added the word financial sector transformation has to contribute. 12 to 7. It's there now. You can see it. There's nothing I can do, really. I mean, yeah. 12 to 7. Okay, I'll have to give you the line. Okay, why don't you go to page 92.
Just read the phrase.
At the top, it starts with must also lead. Have you got that?
Yes.
Must also lead, page 92.
Right.
You got must also lead at the top.
Two-thirds of the way down.
No. Please, man. Can you give her the same copy? Alan?
I can't read that.
Okay.
I only got one eye.
Oh, okay, right, yeah, okay. So, can I just say, does it really matter where it is? Can't you leave that to the two chairs? The point being made is this. Financial sector transformation has to contribute to the overall economic transformation of the country as part of a developmental state. Does anybody have a problem with that policy, apart from the DA, obviously? No. So where it goes, please, it's there, we'll sort that out.
Yeah.
Okay, the next point, we'll just read you the insertions, right? Right. Now, when we come to the point about vision, that's 12.213.
Right.
The very last paragraph, that's on page 95, it reads, these and other aspects of vision we just spelled out to you should be part of the overall transformation of the structure of the economy as part of a developmental state, and directed towards significantly reducing the inequalities in our society. That's what we want to do. We want to have, right? No. You know where it came from.
Yeah.
You were sent it. It was taking you 5 minutes to read, right? Okay. 12.38.
Yeah.
It was, now this is the point I want to make. You see, Comrade Joan, you and I did all this reading, right? And the thing that comes out repeatedly is the short-term insurance
exactly.
Is the worst performer.
Yeah.
And you know, in politics, you speak about cherry picking.
Yeah.
With due respect to you, my friend, I've raised this with you, Tandy. We are going to focus on you mainly, the two committees, in our program of action, because we think you are lagging behind the long-term insurance industry and everybody. You can't just go on like that. In fact, cherry picking means we're targeting you, and we want you to change. Okay, so we're adding, and the committee recommends that this be addressed urgently. You can't just note it. We're not saying it must be addressed urgently. Okay, the next thing is a minor change. Then we go to, we'll have to remove now an inconsistent paragraph, Zakela, the one where we say we dismissive of empowerment financing, right? Because that has to go. Again, 12.42 on page 100. 12.42 on page 100. 12.42.
Right.
It was said at the hearings that the short-term insurance industry did not meet any of the management control targets in the generic code. This needs to be addressed urgently. We can't just leave it like that. Something has to be done. Okay? Then the other minor things where we picked up inconsistencies in use of acronyms.
Yeah.
12.64. This is on page 104. Based on what Advocate Shaw said yesterday, we put in this. 12.64 on page 104. The committees note that Advocate Shaw has proposed a bill to address this problems about repossessions. The committees will refer this bill to the Department of Justice and the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Constitutional Development for their consideration. That's straightforward. Yeah, we can't instruct them.
No.
We have no right to take over the Justice Committee's role. No, we can't. We haven't seen the bill. How are we going to recommend a bill we haven't seen?
Right.
Tell me you should trust me a bit more, man, please, at this late stage. Right, next one I think is nothing more. That's it. Oh, no, in the program of action, you know who's not said this thing, right? I think it's covered, but to please the person concerned, Tandy, quite frankly, because the man works so hard, you know. How do we put it in? What's the big deal? It's there, but anyway, 13.3 on page 125. Consistent with what has already been proposed, I do make that point, because really it's there. The program should not seek to do too much simultaneously without taking account of the committee's capacities, that's both of our committees, and resources, and the limits of the overall parliamentary calendar. We don't sit here endlessly. there has to be a measure of prioritization and sequencing is what the comrade was saying.
Yeah.
So look, there's nothing major in this version. So comrade, there's a process now. Comrade Chair, you've got to help.
Yeah.
You see, we can leave this thing and leave Zakela, you and me, to finish it off, cleaning up, and vote on Tuesday. Or we can do what finance has until now agreed, which is we vote on the report as it is, and if there are any material changes, we'll send them all in track changes now. Maybe minor things here. Then we will reconvene on Tuesday. It doesn't be two joint committees. You can meet separately from us. So I would like to recommend, if it's agreeable to your side,
yeah,
that we vote on this report as is. If between Zakele, you and me, we pick up something that we've left out, then we have our separate committee meetings on Tuesday and vote on it. We're not going to debate on it until the 28th. I'm dealing with process, Tandi. Yeah, so let me finish a proposal. Then you can say whether you accept or reject it. So what I'm suggesting is we do what we do in the finance committee. Mm-hmm. To a second point that arises is neither committee has got a quorum. As I understand, are you contacting Mr.
But we have a quorum just now.
Mr. What's his name? Jenkins. He has to come now. We're voting. Yeah.
We don't have a quorum.
No, hang on. Yeah, now what I'm saying is there's nothing, according to what I understand, can Tebo, Alan and Tebo help us, and your committee secretary, where we do what we do. We co-opt members.
That's
so
exactly.
We have got six. So you co-opt us when the trade industry is voting on it. We co-opt you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or something like, so the two committees have voted on the bill.
Yeah.
So the first thing is, do people agree we should vote now, after millions and millions of hours? And if there are any major changes, we just reconvene and deal with that issue on Tuesday. And B, can we just co-opt members on each side? Let the chair speak about process, then we ask members to come in. Do you have any...
I don't have a problem.
Okay, right. Tandi?
Chair, I want to check with David if he believes, is there any other procedural matters that we might have, were not consistent with before we vote?
She thinks you're going to take us to court, I think. Would you welcome to do?
Sure. I mean, Chair, maybe if I could just have a minute or two just to put our position.
Yeah, sure.
I expect that the committee will adopt the report. And
yeah.
So I just want an opportunity to put our position. I don't particularly have an appetite for a long debate. But my position is this. I want to take you back to the period prior to the first public hearings. And I regard this process really as a lost opportunity. And I say that because the scope of these hearings was never, in my view, properly canvassed in this committee or agreed to by the committee. Now, you might want to agree with that position, or you may not. But at the end of the day, my view is we did not have an opportunity as a committee to agree to the scope of these hearings. Had we had that opportunity, there are issues in addition to the issues which this committee traversed, which we would have liked to have traversed. And those issues would have included, first, a vision for the financial sector, which you do touch on in the report. What's missing, I think, in the financial sector and in South Africa generally is a new, big, bold vision for the financial sector. I speak under correction, but as I understand it, the financial hub and the financial capital of financial services in Africa is Paris. So that's the first thing. I would have liked the public hearings to traverse that issue. I would also have liked the public hearings and the process to have traversed the whole question of how we grow the sector, generate investment in the sector, and generate more employment in the sector, and what the constraints are on growing the sector, what the constraints are on investment in the sector, what the constraints are on incentivizing more employment in the sector. I would also have liked us to have in detail dealt with how the constraints on financial inclusion and specifically what can be done to extend financial inclusion and extend financial services to poor people in South Africa, and so you've dealt with that in detail. And last of all, I think in this day and age, it would have been incumbent on the committee to deal with the fourth industrial revolution and fintech, both its impact on the financial sector and also the opportunities that it presents, particularly to extend financial services. And that was never done, and I think that that's a lost opportunity. Now, the committee might argue, and this would be a valid argument, that these themes could be addressed in a future report, as they surely could be. But I think that it's a significant lost opportunity. So that's the first point. The second point, Chair, on the report itself. I expect the committee is going to agree to vote and adopt the report. I would propose that we consider perhaps doing it differently. I mean, in view of your point, Chairperson Eunice, you correctly pointed out that in this particular context, an economy on the recovering from recession, a massive jobs crisis, a fiscal crisis, Michael Sachs says the worst since the global financial crisis. You say that we need to be careful, and you're right about that. I mean, we are, as a committee, are about to adopt a report where we make statements about ownership that could be interpreted as supporting what National Treasury and Momo Moniat call the Venezuelan option. That's the first point. On the Saab, we make statements that could be interpreted as not as reigniting a debate about the purpose and the mandate of the South African Reserve Bank. And my question to committee members, do we really want to do that? Would it not be wiser in this context to remain with the original position, keep this report as an interim report, hold a second set of hearings on the themes that I proposed, but also on perhaps the outcome of the financial sector summit and those processes, and then at some point in the future produce a final consolidated report. I think that would be a wiser course of action in this context. I leave it there, Chair. I don't intend to say much more about the matter.
Can I guide the meeting, because I'm chairing. You just have to respect that, whatever you think. You said yourself that you don't expect much of a reply. It's your concluding remarks. Having said that, and bearing in mind it is now 20 past 1, I'm urging members not to open up all the debates again. So in their replies, I want brief responses, but I also need to put the facts on record. Having said that, is there anybody who disagrees that we need brief responses now? Otherwise, we're opening up all the debate.
I disagree. But
you disagree.
Fine.
Having said that, it is the wish of this meeting that people be brief. And having said that, it's a ruling now. Have you got an opposition to it? It's a ruling that there will be brief responses, because most of these issues have been covered in different forms. Mr. Mania is saying one or two new things, the rest we've covered, and it's addressed in the report. Having said that, Thandi.
Chair, it's the second time I register my disappointment at David, and I repeat it again. David is a dishonest person, and I'll keep on reminding him about this dishonesty. First and foremost, we discuss the scope. If we can, we can take out all the minutes where the DA showed laxity in terms of attending when we were discussing this matter. They were always absent from both the committees, from trade and industry and from SCOP, and they actually never even participated in the process, even when we were discussing the scope. Now that you came to the end of the report, he wants to change the scope. That's typical of David Maynor, and that's why I called him dishonest, and I'll continuously call him. Actually, I set him up. I wanted him to do this because he plays politics all the time. That's why I said I wanted him to speak, because I wanted to expose his dishonesty. Second, if you read the report that we tabled yesterday in the chamber, if at all he bothered to read it, it's got a big paragraph on the mandate of the South African Reserve Bank and the recommendations that this committee has made in terms of Section 2, 25 of the Constitution that its independence will not be tampered with. So he did not bother to read that report. That's why he raises the issues that he raises here. In terms of the Venezuelan option, we have made it very clear that we are not going to create a problem with the financial sector by taking decisions that are going to make it very difficult for them to operate. And we have made it very clear that we are also not going to budge, because the reason why the GA has asked the question today as to what will be the impact on the economy if you transform, they want to create an impression that once we bring black faces in our economy, it's going to collapse. And that narrative, we're going to reject it with the contempt it deserves. It is not true that when black people get involved in the economy will collapse. He must show us proof where it has happened. In the African continent, there are many successful countries led by black people, and they are thriving.
With respect.
And one of them is Botswana. I did not interject David when he was speaking. I never interjected him.
It's not a point of order. Let us finish. You have a right of reply outside the meeting.
Just simply misrepresenting what I'm saying.
That's fine. That's not a point of order. She can say you're misrepresenting her. Yeah, fine. It's not a point of order. We're not going to encourage you. We'll have a discussion offline. Finish your point.
I'm finishing my point, Chair. We're not going to take that scope that is suggesting it's a majority view. We are concluding on the interim report. We are going to finalize on the issues that we have consulted the sector on, and any other matter that will be detrimental to the economy, as the ANC are not afraid to entertain, you have to prove that it will be detrimental to the economy. For now, we're continuing, Chair. Thank you.
Look, because then she has a right of reply.
I just wish to record that that statement misrepresents what I meant, and I just keep it on the record.
Okay. Do you want to reply, Tandy?
I listened to David and even took notes when he was speaking. He must show me where I misrepresented him.
Okay. Can I just say a few quick things, right? Largely what Tandy is saying, I think, is accurate. I can't agree necessarily with everything because I'm a chairperson, right? Whether I agree privately, that's another matter. Firstly, David, you've raised this before. Now, I refer you to the Financial Sector Transformation Report. It does say we need hearings. Pinky made an entire input in the debate where she said, at the end of the financial sector transformation process, FSRB, right? You will recall that many black, African particularly, participants came in and said, you are introducing this Twin Peaks legislation. Now, I think we should just put it on record because I don't know whether this gets cast over 408 and they won't know this. You see, I'm not going to go long. I think Tandy has covered a lot of it. But in a nutshell, like heads of argument, they came and they said, you're introducing this regulation. It's going to be harder for us as blacks to enter the market. You're correct to defend the deposit holders and the policy holders. What about us? So Pinky was mandated by the ANC to make an input. The entire input was, yes, the financial sector regulation bill is fine. However, it has unintended consequences. And we explain in the beginning of this report, David, why we've got this hearing. It's there. You were there, or maybe Mr. Lees was there. It was voted on in G26. Secondly, nothing stopped you from raising the issues. Thirdly, I mean, the issues of fintech and digital banking are there. Fourthly, you say, let's have a discussion. That's exactly what we do say there. We're asking the Reserve Bank to come with regulations. Why don't we do this? The first thing, I am very interested, having been to that Washington conference, and I wish more people are going to come, I'm going to ring Ms. Crawley. I told you, David, privately. You know, I want to tell you something very quickly. I reported to them. Can I just ensure I get my report done, right? There's a thing called Paytm in India. 150 million people are using banking services and paying minimally, right? So these are issues we're going to look at. On the issue of Venezuela, Saab, obviously Tandy's covered me. We cannot change their constitutional role. We're very soft in what we say there. On the issue of hearings, that's exactly what we plan to do. I would recommend, because, you know, we don't know where we'll be. Actually, it's covered, but maybe we put in a thing there, to say including public hearings. When we say we will review the report, the idea is, although we didn't say it there, it was my head, maybe we should say it there, I'm sure comrades agree, We should say, including where appropriate, hearings. We're not going to call everybody again. We'll call the banking sector and the unions and the emerging banks and the established banks and so on. We're going to do that anyway, so that's covered. This is not a final report. We're saying it's report one. We even put it on there. I don't think, with due respect to you, Mr. Mania, and I accept that you're a shadow minister, so, yeah, whatever that means. I heard about your wonderful reply, by the way, which has become a legend. You heard what she said when she discovered as a shadow minister. I must tell you, I had a wonderful story, but let's be there. Now, on the issue of the economic crisis, we do address the issue. What we are trying to say is, obviously, we're not going to the Venezuela option. But on the other hand, what we say is that it's true that the economic challenges constrain, we've got it there in the report, Comrade Tandy, the economic challenges constrain how much of transformation you can do. And we quote the Jonas's point. You know, Jonas made a very nice input in the City Press. The relationship between what? Growth and transformation. If you don't do the one, you can't do the other. It's covered there. Moreover, we say, yes, it's true the economic challenges constrain what you can do, but precisely because we have these economic challenges, on the other hand, we have to transform. Right, so we are done. So we heard you, Tandy. Can we move on, and are we agreeing on the process issue? Okay, so in that case, now he has a right to speak. Tandy, there's no rule that prevents him from speaking, Mr. Mania. It's your right to speak, you responded. Now, can we suggest that we co-opt your members? Can we move for the co-optation?
Well, that's what I wanted to suggest to you. We've got two of our members coming now. They are about 40 seconds away, maybe 30.
Yeah, but we have got a quorum anyway. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
You know, we would prefer to have
a bigger quorum. Okay, fine, we'll wait.
But I also just want you to say one thing, and it's simply on a principle, Chair.
Yeah.
And that principle is, I've actually written a letter in this regard, that it's very, very important for all parties to ensure that at least, especially the majority of the opposition parties, to ensure that they do have a representative. I've repeatedly said this in my committee, because what happens, you lose track of something that's been said. And the other thing is, I have found in some political parties, colleagues do not share information. It doesn't matter who it is. And in others, they do. So I think as part of our constitutional duty as legislators, this is a very important process we're undertaking. And I've made the same point in my own committee, the Portfolio Committee of Trade and Industry, which is why we recalled two people who were in another committee to be here, and they're here, I guess, any minute now or second.
Now, let's not open the debate again with due respect, Pinky, I agree. The point is, your DA member walked out, as he often does when we have this joint sitting. Now, Mr. Mania, it is fair for us to presume that when it comes to transformation issues, the members of the DA who run away. But when it comes to defending, not that you can do much about it, when it comes to defending certain interests, they're here. So the DA's members of the Trade and Industry Committee, if I'm correct, have not been here for several of the recent sittings. I saw that gentleman leave, actually, when I was standing out there. That's true, Mr. Mania. Empirically, it's true.
No, it's not true. And again, I want to be on record that it's misrepresented. And, Yunus, frankly, you talk about the banks. We actually take action on the banks. Who pursued African Bank, and who pursued the SARB on African Bank?
Mr. Mania. The point is, where is the DA or DA colleague? That's the point we're making. Where is your DA colleague? Can we vote now?
Yeah, I think there was one other person coming in. Let me try her if she's in the list. She's in the list.
Now, where are you, Mr. Jenkins? Where are you? Yeah, basically we can co-op members, right? Or do we, because the joint report, vote as two committees together?
She's correct. We vote separately. It can be one of us. Yeah.
On then, can we quickly, as the finance committee, propose? Can somebody propose, Pinky? We're voting, Pinky. I don't know where you went.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, fine. Can you propose co-opting the DA members? Can we have their names, please? Can you just announce it for the record? I know your names. Starting with Comrade Mantashe. Can you just announce it for the record so it can be minuted? Hello, you're minuting, yeah.
My name is Toza Mamandash.
Hey, Pimboyane.
Chair, my name is Lerato Saki. I'm Cheryl from Skalk Lake.
Pinky is moving for the co-optation of all four. Frank, we can do it like that. Is that correct? Right. Seconded, Pinky, Tambi's hands have gone up. Okay. The Finance Committee, we agree to adopt this report as is, with the changes agreed to. And we will give you another copy by Monday morning. If there's anything material, each committee will meet separately and vote again on Tuesday. Okay? Can you note all of that, right? Mm-hmm. Having said that, can you move over the report as proposed, right? Seconder? Thank you very much. Now you've got to co-opt us.
Yes.
Chair,
we always do that. No, we recognize that.
I'm going to be asking the Honorable Mantashe to propose the co-option of Honorable... you know, I can't even think straight now anymore. Tobias, Honorable Karim, Honorable Tandi Tobias, and Honorable Kakane to our committee, Trade and Industry.
Chair, I'll officially propose that we co-opt Comrade Tandi Tobias, Comrade Kekana, and Comrade Karim to our committee. Thanks.
Honorable Bayani.
Second the proposal, Chair.
Members, we're being part of a joint committee process.
So they have to move.
Yes, that's again it is. And as you know, we have two people medically off and a third at a funeral. So what we do now is we need one of you here in the whole committee to propose that we adopt the process forward. Honourable Tiako.
Thanks, Chair. I move for the adoption of the report.
I should have added with amendments. Seconded by?
Chair, I second the report.
Can I then just, in a nutshell, say that this has been a Herculean effort, okay? It took many, many hours on and offline, and I really want to thank all the colleagues and comrades, and staff in particular, Zakele, and your person, Margot, and Antonia, she's not here, and also the forbearance of the departments and the Reserve Bank and so on. Can we also say that we must thank very much, Comrade, I can speak about this quite knowledgeably and from experience, Comrade Chairperson here from the Trade and Industry Committee, Joan Phelps, who despite her endless responsibilities as a chair, is always available and shuffles her program around. They started at 8 o'clock this morning, and she actually managed to get a quorum. No, Tandi? If we meet at 8, and she's here, and really, thank you so much. It's been wonderful working with you, Joan. Your ability to also make compromises is something that I really cherish. And you know you're very loved by all of us in the movement for your seniority and your work ethic. And let me tell you something else. She just finished a 20-kilometer run, right? What did you come out? You came out? Third. She came out third in a 20-kilometer run. Can we please note that? Pinky, can you even run half a kilometer without your wheels, right? So having said that, yeah. Let's not even talk about Tandi. Can we thank you very much, yeah. Thank you.
And thank you, Chairperson Karim. I have learned a lot from you and also from the members of the Standing Committee on Finance. And I do thank members of the Trade and Industry Committee. Thank you.
You don't include Mr. Mania. You're too kind. Okay, colleagues, let's move to the fiscal framework, proposed fiscal framework. I know Mr. Mania and I had an exchange over the phone, and I've asked Advocate Jenkins to come here on Section 6.5. But in the meanwhile, can we just go to the changes proposed? We'll come back to the process issue because it may be addressed in part by something we've got here. So colleagues, can you turn to page 11? It's in red. You'll find it in red. On page 11, it's called the Standing Committee on Finance. You'll see them kindly note that the additions to the original report. You recall the consolidated report? We split it into two, which is correct, actually. But, you know, what material defect is another story. Now, what I would like, Joan, is can two of your members remain behind so we have a quorum if we're voting? All right, if you can come back at 2. Normally we finish by then, hopefully. But anyway, okay, if you can come back. Can we have one more member from the Trade and Industry Committee come in? Please. We're going to have lunch in a few minutes. Okay, the first point then is on page 11. We notice it's 7.1 on page 11, colleagues, there's nothing major there. We notice the overlap between the revised fiscal framework for this financial year and the proposed fiscal framework. On page 12, we say the committee notes the clarification by Minister Khadebe that the mandate paper does not indicate specific funding allocations as this is part of the budgeting process led by the National Treasury and the Minister of Finance. While welcoming this more coherent approach that seeks to firmly integrate the NDP and the MTSF with the budgeting process, the committee believes that the constitutional and statutory powers, functions and roles of Treasury and the Minister of Finance in the budget process and related matters as spelled out in the Constitution, Chapter 13, and the Public Finance Management Act, 29 of 19, particularly Section 6 of the chapter, and Chapter 4 needs to be adhered to. Right? Any comments on this? Yeah, it's on page 12, point 72. There's nothing there. We're simply saying that the law must be conformed to. Zakele noted all the stuff. He wrote this part about the sections and so on. Then we go down on 7.5, we're simply filling in figures to make this thing more consistent with the projected fiscal framework. Those figures are drawn by Zakere from the documentation. Then on 7.7 is a new point, which I think Tandi, I think Pinky made this point in a different way, and we're just adding to it. The committee welcomes the Judicial Commission inquiry into tax administration and governance at SARS, which is expected to assess the factors responsible for revenue under collection and recommended remedial action. The terms of reference of the commission, who is appointed as judge, and the support team between important considerations. Right? Those are like simple, straightforward things. Then we go to 7.17 on page 15. It says, National Treasury needs to report, obviously, to the committee. That's straightforward. Now, here it is, Mr. Mania. The committee recommends that in terms of Section 6.5 of the Money Bills Act, the adoption of the proposed fiscal framework. The committee will monitor its implementation in terms of the observations and recommendations set out above. Now, Mr. Mania has an issue about whether the process we are covering meets the requirements of the Act. I spoke to Mr. Jenkins. Okay, over to you, Mr. Mania.
Chair, I think Advocate Jenkins is familiar with the issue. It would seem to me that there are two issues. One is the committee adopting, or three issues. One is the a possible briefing by the Treasury on the proposed fiscal framework. The other is the adoption of the report by the committee. And more importantly, I think the third issue is the adoption of the report by the NA. That's actually the issue. Now, in Section 6.5, which deals with the proposed fiscal framework, the Act is very clear. Each committee on finance must, 30 days after the tabling of the medium-term budget policy statement, report to the National Assembly or the National Council of Provinces, as the case may be, on the proposed fiscal framework for the next three financial years. So I actually think we can take a view on the committee process. But at the end of the day, it seems to me that the Act is clear. The National Assembly, in our case, must adopt the report after 30 days. So that raises a question then, if I understood correctly, your intention was to for the committee to adopt the report today, hopefully now, and for the report to be
adopted by the National Assembly on Thursday afternoon.
28th, remember I explained to you. So it that's the proposal, 28th.
Okay. If you could just, I expected it was tomorrow afternoon. I might have got it wrong.
You guys said no. We were going to discuss it in the committee tomorrow, yeah, not in the House.
Correct. It would seem to me, on my interpretation of the Act, which obviously is subject possibly to a different view from Advocate Jenkins, is that the National Assembly can only adopt the proposed fiscal framework on or about the 6th of December. And there's a reason for that. And that is, the intention of the Act was to, in my view, ensure that Parliament properly applied its mind to the proposed fiscal framework. So that's the issue that I traversed. Advocate Jenkins may have a different
one. Oh, can I just help? The NTBPS was tabled on the 25th of October, Advocate Jenkins, is that correct? Now, the 30 days, as I understand it, would lapse on the 25th of November, point one. Point two, Advocate Jenkins, if I'm correct, because I want clarity, instead of me now following up with questions, let's put all the questions in one go. If I'm correct, when you were asked by Mr. Mania before about the after, you said the intent of the law is within 30 days, and that we should, in the new amendments now that we are processing, we should just make it within 30 days. Point three, even if it's the case you want to interpret after, in the literal sense of the word, what is to stop the committee voting on the proposed fiscal framework before 30 days, which in any case it has to do because parliamentary rules say there must be a 3-day gap between adopting, I think, some reports, I don't know, not all of them I'm told, and bills and the voting. Then the next question is, can the two committees, we're not meeting jointly, meet separately? According to Charles de Beer, well, the law allows that. Charles says, in fact, they're in Kimberley today, and tomorrow they've got the president replying to questions, so they can't come at 4 o'clock tomorrow, but his understanding, Charles is more experienced than me because he's been chair since 2009, says, no, we can vote separately. So I don't think on that there's a quibble, right? Then the next issue is not a legal issue, Advocate Jenkins. Given that the committee has always never disputed this, that it should be two separate reports, but we put it in one report, and given that we've now agreed to have two separate reports, and given that, you know, maybe we should, if we're having two separate reports in future, have another hearing. My own view remains the same, comrades and colleagues. Even if you call in the DG and the minister and all that, or let's say the deputy minister, what are they going to say that they haven't already said? What are we going to ask that we haven't already asked? So I told Mr. Mania over the phone, it is my view, and I think the majority in the ANC will agree, I can't speak for the ANC in this circumstance, that you know what, in future, I think let's do this. It's not a big deal. We have a second sitting, not second public hearing. We can't have people come here on the revised fiscal framework, go back home, and come back on the proposed. What are they going to do? So in the advert, Zakele and Alan and Tebo, we should say there are two aspects. Revised fiscal framework, proposed fiscal framework, and they must comment on each. How many people, you think even the economists will do that? They're going to comment. You think Mr. What's his name, Professor Rousseau is going to do it? Well, he might, but the rest of them won't, right? So I'm saying there's no material outcome, Mr. Mania. I tried to persuade him over the phone. There's no material outcome. So in short, let's deal with the legal issues, bearing in mind we are where we are and they are practical proposals, right? And so on the legal issues, can you reply, and then we'll take Tandy.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the crux of the question is, what do we mean in the Money Bills Act after, report after? Now, it's not the only place, 6.5 is not the only place which the Act uses after. Yeah, there's 6.7, 7, 6, 10, 6, 12, 8, 3, etc., etc. So, in terms of what is today accepted by the Constitutional Court, and that's the Supreme Court of Appeal judgment I've referred this committee to before, the Natal Pension Fund case, where the you have to interpret something within the context and within the purpose of it. And the whole purpose of the Moneyballs Act is to say, within your annual budget cycle, let's create a procedure where Parliament can affect amendments based on its oversight responsibilities without creating sudden surprises that's going to shake the economy. Now, this was sort of the purpose of it, and to have that respect for the various responsibilities for the arms of government, not used in the Constitution, but the executive on the one hand and Parliament in the other hand. So when we said in the Act, we use the word after, sometimes we use the word within. My interpretation of that is it means the same thing. We are dealing here with the outer time limits, and a committee can report before that. If we take a different conclusion, it really means that a committee must report after, any time after, so that we can report next year on the MTBPS. Which will be a ridiculous, if I can use it. It will be a non-working solution. So we can't interpret legislation like that. So my view has always been, from the beginning, from the first year we started implementing this Act, that when we say within, we actually mean that's the outer limit, so let's report within it. And specifically with something like the revised fiscal framework, I mean, the amount of time given to the committees to report and for the House to report is exactly the same. So you have to manage that, and it just indicates that it's the outer limit and we're trying to squeeze everything in, which is the problem, and that's why we are busy with the amendments. So, Chair, I think I've already spoken about the whether reporting together or separate in the MTBPS or not. I would just like to add, with the proposed fiscal framework in the MTBPS, the House has usually approved it, but it's not necessary to approve it. It's a proposed. But it is a way of actually acknowledging that this is the direction we're going. So there's nothing wrong with saying let's approve it or not, but you don't have to approve the NCBPS. Like, you don't have to approve the strategic plan of a department, but usually the committee will look at it and say we are happy with it or not. So there is that area, and that's just the parliamentary practice. Actually, let me leave it at that and not take too much time. Thanks.
Tandy, want to say something?
Can David respond? Because it's on those bases that I'll do.
Okay, Mr. Vania.
Let me respond to Advocate Jenkins and then also to some of the points that you made. So, I would argue, first of all, that the operative word here is not after. The operative word here is must. So let's have a look at the context. We look at Section 6. The Act is very clear. It uses the term must. It doesn't use other terms in the same section. For example, if you look at Section 6.1, it uses the term at least. It's very specific. If you look at 6.12, it specifically says, in respect of the minister reporting, within 7 days. So if we look at the context, the legislature has been very clear in the wording that it's used. It has used the term, the operative term, must 30 days after. It is quite specific, and it is in contrast to other sections where other words are used, like at least or within. So that's the context. On the purpose, it seems to me that the purpose of the legislation or of the legislature was to compel Parliament to properly apply its might. That's why it's spelt out a 30-day period. That is the purpose. And that's further supported by this Act, which seems to me quite different from certainly other Acts which I've come across in my limited experience. It's very specific and gives a definition of what days means. That's why 30 days after the tabling of the medium-term budget policy statement in this Act doesn't mean the 28th of November. It's closer to either the 6th or the 7th of December. And so that's on your point, Eunice. I've dealt with the intention and the other points I don't disagree with. But at the end of the day, What we have to look at is the operative word, and the operative word is must. It's very clear, and it contrasts to other time parameter type formulations like at least or within. The intention, and the intention here was to compel the legislature to properly consider the proposed fiscal framework over 30 days. So I would I would think that Advocate Jenkins is probably, is in my view, incorrect.
Advocate Jenkins, can you reply quickly? We can't have an endless discussion. Oh, you I thought you wanted to deal with legal issues first. All right, fine. If you do, okay.
Chair, we're dealing with legal issues. David is speaking to legal issues, so we want to respond to the legal issues that he's speaking to. The last time I checked, both David and me are not lawyers, and our interpretation of the law should be based on advice from legal experts. And I'm going to use my little knowledge, having been around Parliament, about what I thought that the Money Bills Act meant to cover in its context. I thought that the parameters of the 30-day rule, Advocate Jenkins, was not to allow ministers to respond beyond the 30 days, but to respond within that 30 days. But if the interpretation that we have is incorrect, you can always be advised otherwise. Because as we stand, David is disputing what the interpretation table here by our own legal advisor. Now, Chair, it then comes into a situation where you rule in an event that we as members of the committee got different interpretations on the legal advice given to us by our own legal advisor. Because to me, the way it sounds as if David wants to test it beyond this parameter, whether the interpretation of that rule is correct or not. And there is nothing else we can do if he's got his own interpretation, different from what we understood, but to take a decision on how we want to proceed. Second, it is in this context that had it been for any other good reason that we want to advance, we would have wanted to, even beyond 7 days, engage further. That's why at the beginning we said we will entertain recommendations. That never came forth to this extent. So for us to remain only to the interpretation, and I'm not saying to the rule, I'm saying to the interpretation of the rule, I'll therefore beg to differ and want us to proceed in the manner in which we have proceeded, as always, as Parliament.
Jenkins, reply, and then we'll decide on how what we do. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think, firstly, just on a practical issue, just because we have more days to do something doesn't mean we're going to apply our minds to it. Just dealing with the argument of Mr. Mania, the comparison that we can draw to using the word after is really in Section 12 as well, which deals with the adoption of the fiscal framework, and I refer to that, which uses the exact same wording that you must report after 9 days. So we're dealing with must report after 30 days in Section 6 and must report after 9 days in Section 12. Now, I would argue that that should be interpreted in a similar way. If we look at, Honourable Tobias, if we look at the minister's response only comes in Section 12. But it's critical also to look there at the wording to say that the minister must give in at least a few days, 2 days to be exact. So, again, to get back to the meaning of what does it mean to report after, if we're going to say that means you must report after 9 days, in other words, exactly after 9 days or exactly after 30 days, when the House, in other words, would then be compelled to have a sitting, so to look at that report or for the committee to look at the report, I certainly would argue that was not the intention of the legislature to hamstring or to really be so strict with these time frames, Chairperson. So my view would be that we look at it not just in context of Section 12 and Section 6, but the whole purpose of the Act in general, which sets outer boundaries and not inner boundaries. And Chair, I mean, I would agree with you. I certainly don't want to argue with members about the correct interpretation, but the practice that Parliament has applied is in line with the advice I'm giving. And I will leave it at that.
I think Dandy's right, Mr. Mania. All I can say as a chair is, firstly, you have got much of what you wanted. We've separated the reports. We are even saying that next year, you know, personally, I don't know what the value would be, but okay, let's have another sitting. I don't know why. We'll ask the same old questions. They'll reply the same. But fine, if people don't have an extra sitting, it's fine. We can sit in the afternoons. I'd love that, so that we'll see how many people stay. But we'll do that. Thirdly, we are amending the Act. Actually, if it hadn't been for, you know, our oversight, we would have finished it. We were almost finished. The section that I delayed, well, first we couldn't get joint meetings with appropriate, but the section that I delayed is when I went somewhere for a three-day thing. It was a central committee meeting of the party or something, and I happened to accidentally pick it up out of my bag, and then I realized that after and so on, wasn't addressed properly in 9 days, and I then said, no, I must come back to comrades and colleagues and say, let's tighten that. Interesting is around this area. So I don't know what the effect of what you're doing now, Mr. Menia, is. We're saying we're amending the Act. We're not going to make a substantial, we're just going to clarify. Right? So we're going to do it. In fact, what I suggested this morning, if we vote on these things now, I'm hoping a slot will open up next week where we just finish this Money Bills Acting, hand it over to Jenkins to work on over the November period, December period, and then we come back and vote on it. So we're addressing the issue. Secondly, we're saying to you, we have done two reports, you've seen it. Three, we're saying to you, yes, we can have another sitting. So you made your point. The effect of your point is exactly what I said, and we will clarify it. As Tandy says, you can go to the courts and so on. By the time you heard, we'll have passed the Money Bills Act. It's no good faith. In other words, can I just say something else? And I mean it with the greatest of respect to the MPs that were there. Somebody told me, this was very central, I won't mention his name out of respect for him, that actually they rushed headlong to finish this thing towards the end. And I think there was an election year term end, right? Is that correct? Just before the 2009 election. And when I pointed out one or two of these errors, having read the bill and having been informed by, what's his name, Mr. Muller, I then realized, I said, hey, what you bloody did there? It was a joke in the house. And he roared in laughter. He said, Karim, he calls me Karim, you are right. You know how we did it. Hey, we were under pressure. So your Dion George, was it? Also raised with me. He had other objections, right? And he said, we rushed this thing through and so on at the last minute. And I said, look, I can't account for my predecessor here. But in any case, what I'm saying to you is, my predecessor, what I'm saying to you is, we deal with the issues. So what good faith would be there for you to challenge? If you want, we can put in a paragraph, what value would it add? That the gray areas will be clarified in the amendments to the Money Bills Act, which will be processed by the House by the end of February when we get a slot to debate. What's the point? Where's your point now? You could have a role in amending the Money Bills Act. We're not going to rush into like making it 9 days and 12 days, no. So, can we draw to a close now? I'm just making something for you to think about. There's nothing to say. In that case, bearing in mind the observation of Mr. Mania and our commitments that we will have another sitting next time round, and that we will amend the Act, can I propose that somebody moves for this and that we have a seconder for the report? Pinky, seconder. Thank you, my sister. It's preferably a trade and finance committee member. Hello? Pinky, Tandy, can you second it? Sorry? Yeah, okay. In that case, can we move on the report as a whole? We've moved on the report as a whole. Can I also take up your thanking everybody and to say we won't meet tomorrow at 16 hours? There's just one practical matter. The minutes, right? Zakir, you've done all the minutes, right? Right. The minutes. Now, can we get them in tranches? I was hoping we'd vote on the minutes at 4 o'clock tomorrow, but that's out, right? So can we get the first quarter dealt with, first and second quarters dealt with? Can you distribute them? Can Mr. Mania read them assiduously?
Yeah.
We mandate Mr. Mania, can you note that, to look at the minutes and challenge everything that was said and then go to court and so on, right? And it'll benefit chairpersons, by the way, because we really want more capacity on minutes. Two, can we do the second two quarters, third quarter and fourth quarter, on the next day when the tax ombudsperson comes? Thank you. Having said that, see you
now. Just before you close, I know it's unrelated, but I thought you gave me an assignment yesterday just to engage with the Minister of
to engage the minister of Postbank. And I think there's a request that if telecoms, the minister of telecommunication, Minister Goele. So, Chair, there's a request that if finance and telecoms and National Treasury can come together, because the issue of the amendment, as you also highlighted, of the Banks Act needs urgent attention. And they have done the request as SAPO since June, and Treasury is not moving, and they are really under serious pressure, and given the issue being an issue of national importance. Can we prioritize?
International importance, yeah. Okay.
Can we prioritize?
Can I just say, firstly, you will recall that there's a bill coming to us. It was mentioned by either the Minister Pravin Gordhan or the President in the State of Nation, I can't remember. And I've been engaging with Minister Koyle about this thing. And he explained to me, where's Tracy? He's not even here, so I don't know what the part are. He explained that they were bringing us a generic bill. And I suggested, no, because the Post Bank has been expedited, just bring us a one pager. So I don't know that we need meetings, but if people want to go to meetings, I'm happy that Comrade Pinky manages his meetings over December or whenever she wants to and reports back to us. It's a simple thing. I think the minister has mandated by this committee that we want a simple bill on the Post Bank only, and we want it before the middle of January. So the first sittings we have in January, end of January, is to process that bill. No, you were something.
Yeah, Chair, I think that will be too far. Remember, the Constitutional Court wanted certain things to happen. I thought if we can deal with the amendment before we write, look around that.
Yeah, no, we can't practically, because it has to go to Cabinet first, right? And then it has to be tabled here. And then we have to have public hearings. So within the space of how many working days is it? Is it three this week? Three next week? Six working days. It is physically impossible to do. Secondly, we have to go to the NCOP, so we can't pass it. So I don't know how pass meeting. It's really for pressure from the committee chairman. Or we can delegate it to you. You can speak to Comrade Malusi and put some pressure on him. It's fine. But I don't see the point of a meeting. When will we have this meeting? You can't pass the bill this year. It's completely out, unless you want to meet in December. But then Cabinet will have to now... But physically, we can't do it. In other words, I don't know when the next Cabinet meeting is. Is there a bill before Cabinet?
So I thought me and you are, and the committee are sharing ideas. You are not chopping the messenger, but you are trying to assist the messenger to say, let's look at all those things.
Yeah, okay, fine.
If I can be guided accordingly and say, the reason why I said a meeting, it was for us to say and look at all those things. If the issue of the meeting is not feasible, let's then say, whoever is engage Treasury to make sure that these things happen.
Okay, what's the response of others? No, it's agreed. No, you need respect the fact that you did your job. Yeah.
I can't be short at...
No, not short. We're discussing the feasibility of having a bill in six working days. It can't be done. But that you have done the initiative, we really respect. You did exactly what you were asked to do. You did it immediately. We thank you for that. It's when you're proposing finishing the bill, I'm trying to explain to you why it can't be done. It's impossible. Point one. Point two is, there's a simple thing. Can we agree to delegate Comrade Pinky to speak to Minister Kikaba to facilitate this bill and speak to DG Tondo to do so? No, she can do it. I mean, I've done it, and I think it's good to delegate people. Right. Thank you very much. Is there anything else? Thanks for your opinion. I think you're misunderstanding me.
Okay.
It's not you're not the problem. The parliamentary calendar is. Yes, Comrade Dikileri.
Honorable Chair, can we not make this a Pinky matter? Because to me it sounds like it's her matter and she must deal with it. Without really referring to what we discussed yesterday in our study group, this is a matter that we said it must be processed and see what is possible. And I think she's right to bring it to our attention in the committee. Let's say between you and the whip, see what is possible so that we can push it.
Yeah, but what we cannot do, Dick and Lady, I mean, are you mandating me, can we get this clear now, please? Are you mandating me to ensure the bill is processed in 6 working days?
I'm not saying...
Oh, the message is fine. Oh.
Whatever is possible.
Oh, yeah, no, that's okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we're having no meeting with any committees, right? Because it won't be possible, but we can facilitate it. Yes, that's not a problem. We can do it. I mean, Tandy can do it. It's fine. I'll do it. Whatever. Yeah, no problem. Is there anything else? No. Thank you very much. Lunch for those who stayed. Thank you.